Welcome aboard, you people. It is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence. We are here at Starship WGN Studio A.
The mothership.
The mothership. And on the CLTV currently. Mm-hmm. In the 4 o'clock hour, we are magically going to wing our way. I don't know how magic it is, but I think it's
the traverse is pretty magical.
Yes. I think we're just going to take a car, but whatever. We're going to get to White Sox Festival because at 4 o'clock, Sox Fest kicks off officially with the opening ceremony. Yeah. We don't know exactly what we're going to be expecting at that opening ceremony.
Oh,
we hear
gosh,
all kinds of things, all kinds of rumors. And we'll be there and handling all things that come at us after 4 o'clock between the national news. The president has said he's called press back in to the White House for, we're assuming, you know, one of those kinds of he sits down at a desk and a bunch of people ask him questions. We're going to find out. We'll play that for you when that happens. And when we receive it, because they do that, and then they hold it, and then they move him, and then they release it, which is part of the new protocol at the White House. So we'll play that when that becomes available. And, of course, we'll have all the other stuff from Sox Fest, including talking to Jason Benetti, by my estimation, the best play-by-play television local sportscaster in America.
He's amazing.
Hawk Harrelson will be with us.
All right.
Jim Tomey will be with us.
Mm.
And a special sit-down that Kevin Powell's having with Rick Hahn right now.
Love that.
So we'll get you, we get all of that. So we got something for Sox fans, for baseball fans, and for fans of the United States of America who are like, what in the hell's going
what
on?
What happened? What did I wake up to this morning? And what has happened since?
All right, so Roger Stone gets arrested. We'll talk about that coming up in just a few minutes with the guy who was kind of at the very center of this in a lot of ways, Mark McKinnon, who's one of the characters of and producers of The Circus, which is the TV show on Showtime that followed the 2016 election, but now is there's so much craziness that continues on. During the 2016 election in October, they had a sit-down bizarro dinner interview with Roger Stone where he basically acknowledged that he knew what was going on with the Russians and with WikiLeaks.
It almost as if he was writing Mueller's indictment that day with what he said. The same type of language appears in the indictment.
So we will talk to Mark McKinnon about that and play that audio for you. So you've got it. Tom Skilling joining us this hour as well to tell us about the cold weather and worse that is coming this way in the next week.
In Siberia, it's actually warmer than here. Right
yes.
Now. Actual Siberia, not
we're now
Siberia.
In Siberia. And then Mike Monaco will also be here this hour to talk about what the Stone indictment means for the Russia probe more generally. And then we get to your White Sox. It's unbelievable. All right, let's just start with what happened. This is the big news of the day. Here is Donald Trump reopening the government.
I am very proud to announce today that we have reached a deal to end the shutdown and reopen the federal government. As everyone knows, I have a very powerful alternative, but I didn't want to use it at this time. Hopefully it will be unnecessary.
Okay. That powerful alternative he's referring to, obviously, is by executive order using funds already available for national security to build the wall, including military funds.
Yeah.
By
something that is sure to
emergency.
Be challenged by the courts.
Right. And his definition of national emergency. But at least it's kind of the last Trump card, pardon the expression, that he has. It's the last thing that he has to be able to negotiate with because he lost political support. There were six Republicans in the Senate who voted along with the Democrats yesterday. He saw that moving in the wrong direction.
And he's lost a lot of support of the people. If you look at polls showing that people are now blaming Republicans and Trump, and they also are not satisfied with what just happened.
About 3 out of 4 Americans are like, I don't know about this. This is the wall worth shutting down the government? Now, a wall, we could debate a wall or we could debate security. We could debate all of those things. That's all very fair. But he continues on.
I want to thank all of the incredible federal workers and their amazing families who have shown such extraordinary devotion in the face of this recent hardship. You are fantastic people. You are incredible patriots. Many of you have suffered far greater than anyone but your families would know or understand.
And not only did you not complain, but in many cases you encouraged me to keep going because you care so much about our country and about its border security.
I saw people with picket signs. I saw some people complaining.
They were complaining.
Yeah. I don't know. This whole thing is everybody called me to tell me how great it was. No, I don't think so.
Not complaining, though, the furloughed FBI agents who volunteered to arrest Roger Stone.
Right. How about
the thank them.
How about the fact that the FBI director released a video today complaining? His own FBI director, Christopher Wray, the guy he appointed to be the director of the FBI, who said it was going to be so great. He had a video today that said, hey, you got to stop this. This is insane.
Well, how about LaGuardia, the flights that were halted there because of the air traffic controller situation? I mean, it was starting to get pretty ugly hours before he made this announcement in the Rose Garden.
I do like, you could tell that the president likes to read warning labels on bottles of things, because listen to how he words this next item.
In a short while, I will sign a bill to open our government for 3 weeks until February 15th. I will make sure that all employees receive their back pay very quickly or as soon as possible. It'll happen fast.
As soon as possible.
Very quickly or as soon as possible.
I think he was on prompter for that. I think he went off prompter a lot in that speech.
Yes, well, he did. He, when he looks down or away, or he stumbles, he goes off prompter. That's how you always know. All right, and then there was some politics, though, that he played into. I'm going to play 11 here. There are some politics here where he did want to do, he wanted to take a little shot.
Without new resources from Congress, we will be forced to release these people into communities, something we don't want to do, called catch and release. You catch them, even if they're criminals. You then release them. And we do as little releasing as possible, but they're coming by the hundreds of thousands. I have had zero Democrat lawmakers volunteer to have them released into their districts or states. And I think they know that. And that's what we're going to be discussing over the next 3 weeks.
That'll go well. Just imagine. Hey, do you want him, Nancy? You want him? And it's, okay. All right. I think that's probably not. Right now, what I think we have here is cooler heads prevailed. The president gave up, which indicates to politicians, to Republican congressmen and senators, that maybe we should negotiate this ourselves, because he may walk away from us anyway. So I think that's what you're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats are claiming a win, and it's hard to argue here. They're saying not that any time you have workers who are furloughed for this period of time is a true win, but political win. She's saying it. Nancy Pelosi saying it's sad that it's taken this long to come to an obvious conclusion, and we're right back where we started.
All right, Mark McKinnon is going to join us, but first, Kim Gordon, standing by in the WGN newsroom. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Roe, the phrase "Get me Roger Stone" has new meaning today.
And in WGN traffic, we're seeing lots of different accidents out there. One on I-55, a crash on the ramp to westbound I-80, and then also some stop-and-go traffic on the Kennedy outbound Montrose to Cumberland because of a disabled vehicle that's blocking the left lane. Traffic brought to you by Farmers Insurance. At Farmers Insurance, the more you know, the better you can plan for what's ahead. Get smarter about your insurance at Farmers. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvo in WGN traffic. Traffic Central.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Ball game over in the Wildcats. Basketball. Awesome.
The Wildcats head north to take on the Wisconsin Badgers in Madison. The pregame at 1. Joey Meyer and I have the tip from the Kohl Center at 1:15.
Chicago's Big Ten team.
Hear Wildcat basketball wherever you go with the WGN radio app and 720 WGN.
Hi, it's Lou Manfredini, and in 2019, I'm starting on the Seattle Sutton Healthy Eating Program. Now, over the past few years, I've put on a few pounds, and I've tried different ways to lose weight. Now, I lose a few pounds here and there, but keeping them off is always a struggle. So my hope is that by changing to a balanced portion-controlled diet, I'll take the weight off and keep it off. But for me, it's not just about the weight. It's to be healthier, not only in the new year, but for years to come. I'm hoping that by losing weight, it will reduce my blood pressure and that I may be able to reduce or even eliminate the medicine that I take to control it. Now, you're going to hear from me every couple of weeks with an update on how it's going, how the food tastes, and how I'm feeling. If you'd like to make a change in your life, then call Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating at 800-442-3438. That's 800-442-3438. What do you have to lose? Besides the extra pounds, you'll be gaining a healthier lifestyle for years to come. 800-442-3438.
Hello, beautiful. Happy New Year, happy new hair color. I'm Amy Arrett, founder of Madison Reed, a hair color company I named after my daughter. Women love Madison Reed. You get gorgeous, shiny, multidimensional, healthy-looking hair. You'll look as if you just came from the salon. What makes our color unique is that each shade is composed of multiple tones, just like a colorist would mix a color formula in the salon. Delivered to your door for under $25 with every box of Madison Reed hair color, you get access to licensed colorists so you could color with total confidence. So if looking good, feeling great, saving time and money are on your list of New Year's resolutions, it's go time. Visit madison-reed.com, take our online quiz to find your perfect shade, and get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit. Use code CHICAGO123. That's code CHICAGO123. Try it. Love it. That's the beauty of Madison Reed.
You've heard the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if it is broke, I can help. Join me, Lou Manfredini, live every Saturday morning on House Smarts Radio as we take your calls live from 7 to 10 a.m. right here on 720 WGN.
House Smarts Radio with Lou Manfredini, brought to you by Ace, the helpful place. Tomorrow morning at 7 on 720 WGN.
When was the last time you were in a food fight? I'm talking about a good, old-fashioned, take it back to summer camp food fight. Smith Sisters from Walter E. Smith Furniture did just that, using a pristine white sofa as their shield. Oh, yeah. Everything flew. There was spaghetti with marinara. There were baguettes. They used that as a bat to actually hit meatballs. There was red wine being spilled on the white sofa. Then you get to watch on this video how they clean it up. And it's like it never happened. Check it all out at smith.com, S-M-I-T-H-E.com. Stain-resistant fabric you can put on nearly any frame is what they were able to clean up so quickly. And with sofas starting at just $700, it is a time to get your grown-up furniture, especially if you got little kids in the house, pets, or slobs. And at any given point in my life, I've had all three in the house. You don't want that. You don't want, you want worry-free furniture. Get up to 25% off the worry-free furniture right now. Smith.com is where it all starts. Walter E. Smith, there's 10 Chicago area showrooms, S-M-I-T-H-E.com to learn more.
Then there's this. When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. Weeknights on WGN-TV.
My lawyers have not talked to the special prosecutors. I don't want to address that question, but I have made it clear I will not testify against the president because I would have to bear false witness against him.
All right, there's Roger Stone out in front of the courthouse today after the FBI, again, guys who were not getting paid to be there but did it anyway, volunteered to arrest Roger Stone in his house in the middle of the night, or early in the morning, I should say, scaring his wife and his dogs. He complained about twice there, Mark McKinnon from the circus. Now, last week we had Mark on, and you were talking about how what was coming up this week. You go, I don't know, on Friday we'll probably have to change the whole show. Welcome to Friday, Mark.
Oh, can you believe it? I mean, this is what a week we took to come back on. And you're right. I mean, what a day today was. I was at the Manafort hearing at the courthouse, and then I was in the Rose Garden at the president's press conference just a couple of hours ago. And, yes, we're redoing the whole show.
Yes, I am imagining you are. I want to play something here that's very important. We've been talking about this for years. You started appearing on this show. Super going to throw himself in front of a train now. You started appearing on this show during the circus two and a half years ago now. And there was this one episode that we talked about right after it aired that was so startling to
Chilling.
Me. It was called From Russia with Love. It was Roger Stone in the fall of 2016 sitting in the Russian tea room in New York City with John Heilman, and he said this.
You, Roger Stone, have said, I believe on multiple occasions publicly, that you have a back channel to Assange. Correct?
Mm-hmm. We just happen to have a mutual friend who moved.
Happened to have a mutual friend?
Yes, who's supportive of Assange and has some connection to it.
And how aware of all this is Trump? Have you discussed WikiLeaks with him?
I have not.
Not once?
Not once.
Never in any of your private conversations? Not once. You have no idea?
Not once.
So, the U.S. intelligence community, quote, is confident that the Russian government directed the recent compromises of emails from U.S. persons and institutions, including from U.S. political organizations.
So, show us the proof.
And you don't believe it?
No, I don't believe it.
Okay. All right. Now, that was October of 2016. Roger Stone acknowledging that he knows Julian Assange. He has a connection to Julian Assange and he's familiar with WikiLeaks. And now today, here we are, January 2019, and he gets taken into custody. What's the nexus?
Well, I mean, that was one exchange of many that we had with Stone on the circus. And, you know, the other line from that particular episode was when he looked at John and said, and this is October of 2016, and he said, the election's not over till we say it's over, in a very menacing way, and which, you know, was sort of foretelling schemes that were that he was hatching. But, you know, I've known Roger for a long time, and, you know, and he's used to be Paul Manafort's political partner, and now he's his partner in crime, of course. And it's just so interesting to see the nexus today of both Roger Stone and Paul Manafort, who have been in the American political consulting arena from the very beginning. In fact, they were the first guys to sort of cross over to using, you know, once they elected people, to start using that influence and lobbying, and also then to go around the world and start representing tyrants and autocrats around the world. You know, that's where Manafort has gotten himself in some trouble, is representing Russians. Mm-hmm. And that's where this whole nexus comes back to. And, you know, now we know that Paul Manafort was sharing polling data with Russians. And so you ask where the collusion is. Well, we know that happened. And we only know this is the tip of the iceberg, or Robert Mueller knows. Now, Stone, he's the Michelangelo of BS artists. And, you know, he loves to suggest that he's had a hand in everything and take credit for everything. And now, of course, when he gets his wings pinned to the wall, he says, oh, I was, I'm just a liar. So don't believe a thing I said.
Right.
And that will be his defense, that he's just a consummate liar and everybody knows that.
WikiLeaks is saying that today. They've been interviewed by several news sources, Julian Assange, I assume, or whoever speaks for him, saying, yeah, that's he was just pretending to have some sort of special access. It was a braggadocio, is what they called it, trying to, you know, pretend that he had something that he didn't. But there was this go-between, this person number two, and I'm wondering, the insider, it seems like most people are saying that is likely Randy Credico, a radio host and
Well, there's that, but the most chilling and concerning part of that indictment for the Trump and the entire enterprise is that it says that a person directed, mm-hmm, a person from the campaign directed
senior
Roger Stone
a
to,
senior person from right. the campaign. They use the word senior in the indictment.
Now, when you think about who a senior person might be that'd be directing Roger Stone, you could only imagine that would either be the president or maybe Paul Manafort.
Right.
Right.
Right. And the stories about the relationship between Roger Stone and everybody else around the campaign was no one wanted Roger Stone talking directly to the president. He had a cell phone. He was constantly talking to him when he was a candidate and even after he had become president. And that was that it makes everybody nuts that Roger Stone, because everybody's afraid of Roger Stone because Roger Stone's nuts. He's got a tattoo of Richard Nixon
on his back.
You know, previously the number one most discredited president in the history of the United States. He may have a contender, the point is that that's it. I mean, that is like, this is really a very, 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 this is a tough day for the president. Let me ask you this. As all of the stuff is going on with the shutdown, now the ending of the shutdown and the acquiescence of the president, which we never thought we would ever see, at least for a 3-week timeout here, how much do you think the Roger Stone piece played in that?
Well, I can only, I mean, the thing that Trump loves to do is when things are going really badly to divert attention, just to, you know, wave another shiny object. So there was a lot of other stuff going on, including, and I'd say, and especially, you know, major airport shutdowns today in places like LaGuardia. So I think the combination of all those things, but you can certainly see how the Stone thing at 6 a.m. this morning, where he could have just said, "Oh, Jesus, I've got to do something to change the story here."
Right.
Because it's going to dominate the news, which it did, of course. And so what better way to do it than to just, you know, fold on the shutdown?
Right. There's other stuff in this indictment that is kind of interesting. We mentioned Randy Credico.
Yeah.
There are moments where he says, we have to stick with the plan.
We have to text messages.
Stick with the plan. Now, I think that Roger Stone may not have thought that there were that these text messages were recoverable or emails or whatever it was, but you know that is if that is not Nixonian as Nixonian as Roger Stone was today when he came down the courthouse steps and he did the two V signs over his head like Nixon. And again, you know, Nixon not exactly going to be remembered in American history as one of the better presidents
or someone you necessarily want to emulate,
right? It's pretty.
That's just it. I mean, Roger Stone, you know, taunted the federal prosecutors into indicting him, and he my view on Stone, I don't think he will ever testify against the president, no matter what pressure they bring to bear. I think he'll go to prison. I think he'll almost happily go to prison. Given the charges against him, unless there's other charges, it probably won't be, you know, more than 5 years or so. He loves being a martyr. I can see him going to prison. He'll be the G. Gordon Liddy of this administration.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You know,
do you think he'll get it? And he'll be hoping for a pardon the whole way.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think President Pence will pardon him?
Well, you know, if Trump ends up getting a run out of office,
yeah.
And he's got a couple of days left before he gets run out, and he has no more friends left, and everything's gone south on him. I don't put anything past President Trump. I could easily see how he would do that.
All right, my friend. Get back to the editing room.
Sunday night for the premiere of season 4. See what we did with this crazy program on Friday when we're redoing the Devil Dan thing. All right,
wait.
Nick.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, thank you. Mark McKinnon from the Circus on Showtime.
Yeah.
Season 4 premieres on Sunday nights, and this phone call might be part of it before it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
Pro-Con Show with Anna DeVlantis here before we head off to Sox Fest, which on the radio starts around 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
After Kim Gordon's news, Kevin Powell will take you through he'll set you up for the opening ceremonies, and I believe Mr. Hogue and Mr. Mazur.
Yeah.
And Carmen. Mr. Carmen.
Got the whole crew here.
Okay. Hogan, Carm, and then Kev, and then Mazur. I don't know. There's so many of them. I don't even know where to count.
Some news already being made there, Kev. Maybe you saw the White Sox tweeting out. Rick Hahn had said that in regards to the pursuit of Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, I'd personally be disappointed if the White Sox didn't land either one. Sweet.
Yeah, I think they would, too. I mean, the fact that they're in the conversation tells you where the organization is at, and they've come so close. So, yeah, I totally understand that, and I think Sox fans would be disappointed, too.
Hoping for an announcement.
Like you said, either one as opposed to one or the other, which means you could have both. Yeah, what does that mean?
Right.
All right. Let's talk now with Tom Skilling, because you just heard what was going on as Kim was trying to relay to us what your words were. And, Tom, they're not pleasant.
No, they're not, Ro. If you would compile a dictionary of unpleasant terms, they're all included in our forecast here over the next week.
You sent this out. Hold on, I got it right here.
Okay. Yep.
And I see the word sunshine in here.
Oh,
yeah.
And it's always accompanied with brutal temperatures,
brutal,
cold,
barbaric, dangerous. These are all terms. Significant snowfall.
Yeah.
All are in the next 7 days around here. The only word we haven't adopted yet is snowstorm, and we're on the verge of doing that for Sunday night, Monday. So,
What is the timing on that? Let's talk about it.
It starts late Sunday night and goes into Monday. And I should tell you, there is some model spread in this. However, the most consistent model runs to run a low through central Illinois, put us on the cold side of it with easterly winds of some note and significant snow. But this cold wave that's coming in, you know, I've been saying up till now we're not going to break records. It now looks like we will break records on this cold wave coming in Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We could have low temperatures by Wednesday morning and even more so Thursday morning, down around 20 below zero here, and might stay at 7 below zero for a high on Wednesday. That seems to be the average.
Did you just say, by the way, permeable basement systems, and you might need your basement to be looked at here.
I know.
You might want to remember them.
Yeah.
As we talk about this, 20 degrees below zero
could
air temperature.
Well.
What does a wind chill do there?
The wind chill there could be under 50 below zero.
Oh,
you know, so this is the kind of cold that we're talking about the middle of next week. This is truly dangerous. And we checked the records. The last time we've had anything like that is 23 years ago. 1996 was the last time we had a 19 below low temperature around there here. That courtesy of my colleague Steve Kahn, who's just combed through the records for us. And Bill Snyder was looking through the records for me yesterday and discovered that the low we were predicting Wednesday would be the coldest in 23 years. So that seems to be what we're talking about here. So we're going to be hearing a lot about the weather next week. This is really, really cold.
Our record low was, what, 26 below air temperature?
Yeah, the all-time record is 26 below, 27 below. It was set in 1985 on the 20th of January. And then we had two 26 below lows before that in 1982, also in January. So we're not going to touch that. But, boy, we're...
Please don't touch that. Just don't touch any of this.
Don't touch anything right now, especially anything metal.
Wow.
But in the short term, tonight will be cold, down to 14 below out in the coldest suburbs, but we think around...
That's an air temperature.
That's an air temp.
We're just talking air temps now. We're not talking about wind chills.
Right.
Man.
And, by the way, you know, people say, why do you put wind chills? Are you guys trying to hype this? No, that that originated in Antarctica. And, you know, when we discovered that the air temperature alone didn't really reflect the effect on the human body was during the Korean War, interestingly enough. We sent our troops over there, and there were cold, all kinds of frostbite cases that emerged, and they realized that just looking at the temperatures wasn't enough. Because what happens is the wind blows against your skin, there's moisture in our human skin, and it evaporates, and that leads to an evaporative cooling that actually takes the effective temperature at the skin down below the thermometer reading. So this isn't an attempt to hype it. There actually is science behind this, and they revised the chill index to a more reasonable number back in 2001, and so we're getting some numbers now that are pretty reflective of just what the effect of wind on human flesh will be. The wind chill doesn't apply to your radiator, doesn't apply to inanimate objects, only to human flesh.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So it's the flesh number.
It is the flesh. We ought to call it the wind flesh number.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, why don't we start
wind
doing
skin.
That?
Well, how about wind skin number? you know, I'm a marketing guy, Tom.
I'm
trying to think of something.
You're a marketing genius,
yes,
bro. And,
right.
and I like that. I think we could go somewhere with that. You
I'm
know?
Don Draper without the body.
Yeah.
Seriously. At what temperature do eyeballs freeze? I mean, I don't remember the last time it's been this cold.
No, it's true. It's been a while. It's over two decades, Anna. So you're right.
So, just even walking around today, it's hard to imagine getting that much colder from where we are right now. To put it in perspective.
Yeah, this is the first single-digit daytime high we've had this year, first sub-zero low we've had this winter. This morning, we went down to 6 below at O'Hare and 5 below at Midway, and it was as cold as 14 below out in Rochelle this morning. And we had wind chills 25 to 30 below minimum around the area. So O'Hare and Midway both bottomed out at 25 below on the wind chill. So it's pretty cold, and it's no picnic out there right now either with a single-digit temperature, 3 above.
So I can't even look at your forecast anymore. It scares me.
I know.
I'm at a loss for words.
So tomorrow, what's the high going
to
be?
Tomorrow we'll be getting up to 10, and then 14 on Sunday.
Oh, that's going to be like like Florida.
Well, and Monday, you know, if you don't mind the snow swirling around you and the wind's blowing like crazy from the east, it'll be 27.
Oh. It'll be nice, and then look out.
Yeah.
When's the drop happen?
The drop will start happening Monday night, and Tuesday will probably peak at 5 and fall sub-zero during the day. Then we go down to 17 below Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, 7 below for a high Wednesday, and 19 below Wednesday night, Thursday.
Oh,
Thursday, about 4 below. And maybe 10 below at night is the current thinking. And even Friday next week, 3 and minus 5 are the extremes. So,
okay. And then do we crawl out next
then
weekend?
Then we do. Yeah. There's
60,
you know,
70? What do you mean?
Well, we're talking is you go out to like the following week, temperatures, which will be as much as 35 to 38 degrees below normal Wednesday, Thursday, will only be the following Wednesday, Thursday, 2 to 3 degrees below normal.
Okay.
So that puts us
high 20s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there's quite a.
Okay.
Quite a bounce back on that.
All right. Okay. You're fired.
Well, thank you, Ro.
We actually need him
that.
For a little while.
Yeah, all right.
Here. Just for a stretch, for sure.
Happy Friday to you, too.
Have a good weekend,
well, you're,
Tom.
You're fired as my happiness director.
I see.
You were, as a meteorologist, it would keep you forever.
See, I didn't even realize I had that title.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah,
or that
director.
That was my charge around here.
I do think you were failing at that, though, to be
I know. Believe me, we laugh about it, but this is
brutal.
Serious
yeah,
stuff.
It really is serious stuff. I mean, this is really dangerous stuff.
It will be next week, yes. And it already is no party out there, so yeah. Guys, have a great weekend. Have fun out there at White Sox Fest.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
I'm going to think about green grass on the field.
It'll happen, Ro.
Yeah, I know.
It will come.
I'm going to think about I'm going to think about when we were out there last season with you. Were you doing your day out there?
Yeah.
With Tom Skilling Day.
Right.
And it was so hot.
We almost
all melted.
I know.
I'm going to think about that day.
Warm thoughts.
We shall return to that.
Yes, we shall.
By the way, in Australia, new record high temperature down there. Adelaide hit 119 degrees yesterday, and was 120 at Port something. It's on the south coast there.
Wow.
They're melting roads over there. It's so hot. It's just terrible.
Wow.
So,
Sorry,
so
weather
think of
extremes.
That.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks,
Keep
Tom.
It, bro. Okay.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye, Tom.
Bye, Anna.
Oh, God. Goodbye. All right. This is quite a moment. Michael Monaco, who is our legal analyst, has stepped into the studio. Roger Stone, arrested today.
Yeah, at his house, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Scared his dog. Yeah, he complained about that afterwards.
Yeah.
I imagine that'd be pretty scary to a dog.
His attorney, Bruce Ragao,
I don't know him,
was dressed like P.T. Barnum on the front steps of the Broward County Court, or the federal court.
Yeah, federal court in Lauderdale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been there?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let me ask you this, Michael. How bad is this for Roger Stone?
It's pretty bad for Roger Stone. I mean, it's so funny. He's sort of has been admitting this for a long time, mm-hmm. that he expected it to be coming, and that he sort of admitted that he lied to everybody, and that he said he doesn't tell the truth, and he makes things up. He's admitted that, but it's bad for him. I mean, he's got 7 counts against him, and the one is about trying to improperly influence a witness who is a DJ in New York. And one of the threats was to get rid of the DJ's dog and to do something to the DJ's lawyer.
What?
That's the worst possible thing a person can do.
He really doesn't care about dogs, it turns out.
Yeah, exactly.
Only cares about his dog.
His dog, right.
Well, actually, everybody only cares about their dogs, let's be honest. But
it's hard to care about others.
But what is this is not the end, do you think?
No.
Of what they're going to charge him with?
No, I don't think so. Well, but I don't know about that, but certainly... It does not say anything. It sort of links him to WikiLeaks, and that he was...
He linked himself to WikiLeaks.
Yeah, absolutely linked himself to
a
WikiLeaks.
A number of times he linked
absolutely.
Himself.
Absolutely. Then he
bragged about it.
And bragged about it, then he lied about it. And he said he didn't have any communications with anybody about WikiLeaks, which apparently there are all kinds of communications with people like Corsi and Credico.
And also now the question is at the White House, where does it go to? Because according to this indictment, and this is the haunting thing in this indictment, according to the indictment, that he had been a senior Trump campaign official.
Right.
Who was directed to
contact Stone about any new releases from WikiLeaks or any other damaging information the organization might have regarding Clinton.
So who would have?
Why is that in an indictment about Roger Stone?
Well, why is it? Because it shows you how high he was acting on behalf of the campaign, that he was very high up in the campaign.
Is that like in like a Marvel movie? Is that like a little like a cameo appearance by who the next person is to be indicted? Well, unless, of course, it's Manafort.
That's a good question. It's hard to say. I mean, the speculation now is that we're referring to Trump, but we don't know.
Well, the senior campaign official, NBC News, is reporting that that person, at least one of those references, is Steve Bannon.
Right. Well, Steve Bannon's definitely referenced in this, but that he was acting in communication with Stone about communications with WikiLeaks. And the question is, who was telling Bannon, directing Bannon to do that? To talk to Stone about these things, and to talk to Stone about when,
because Bannon and Stone hate each other
now.
Yeah.
Well,
Stone, I'm not sure they were friends even then.
Well, Stone is a very wild guy.
Yeah, and Steve wears three shirts. Steve and sartorial splendor is all about Roger Stone and sartorial messiness. He's the reason you need to get the worry free furniture from Walter E. Smith. If you invite Bannon over, because he's gonna
excellent
thank you.
Point.
He's gonna get mud on your somehow. You
no know. Bell for that. Nothing.
Yep.
There okay. you go. But it's they don't mention that the Trump campaign was directly communicating with Russia. So that's not in here. And they don't directly mention the president. So it's it could have been worse for the president, I suppose, in terms right. of today's date.
They got him for obstruction, lying to Congress, and witness tampering.
Right.
Is the idea here that they're going to try to squeeze Roger Stone? He's already said today, very proudly, I will not bear false witness against the president.
I know. He's quite a guy.
So the question, though, is if he doesn't bear false witness, if he doesn't do anything...
Maybe he'll tell the truth.
Well, that's unlikely. But if he... and who would believe him if he did?
Yeah.
Can he get pardoned? Will he?
Oh, yeah, he can be pardoned. But this is the question. Can a president pardon someone who is directly related to an investigation of him? That's the question. And that's never been answered.
Well, I think the Supreme Court's going to have to take that up.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they could send that guy back to beer right now.
Exactly right.
I think you could see that happening. All right. I wish everybody the best of luck here. I'm not sure. I wish America the best of luck. This looks like it's going to be there's critical mass being approached here, and I'm
it's very serious
about a lot of things.
Very serious. Siggy's the sixth high level person.
Yep. Yeah. Michael Monaco, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mike.
It, Mike Monaco. Check him out. No case too big or too small. It's 4 o'clock. Carmen Hogue.
Thank you, Ro. Welcome in. I don't know what it is, Adam Hogue, but I get so excited at a fan convention. I'm ready to play some baseball right now myself. That's how I see it. All the White Sox players are down there. Everyone's talking to them. The media's buzzing around. Hawk Harrelson's wearing a white tracksuit. I'm ready to play some baseball. I don't know how you feel.
Well, part of that is because it's 1 degree outside, and we get to talk about baseball, which always just makes you feel like spring is coming, even if that's technically not true right now. It's a great atmosphere so far. I mean, the fans are inside. We're inside the Continental Ballroom at the Hilton Chicago. Sox Fest opening ceremonies about to start. We're going to carry you all the way through them here as the players will get introduced. Ricky Renteria, Rick Hahn, the whole deal. We just got a chance to talk to Rick Hahn, Rick Renteria, and some of the players downstairs. You can sense the excitement amongst them, too.
I think I threw a curveball at Rick Hahn.
What'd you ask him?
I said, because everyone's wondering, right, when's Manny coming? Is he coming? Will he come? What are you going to do if he doesn't come? Don't you, if you're Rick Hahn, sit up late at night and almost on some level get worried that he's going to call you up and say, I'm in, and then you've committed all that money, and he's got to be the guy that you want him to be?
Well, why would you be worried about that? You've already gone through that process. You've decided that he's worth that much money.
Which is,
you know, let me give you that.
Because
what was his response to that question?
So he's like, you can't sit in this seat. There's no one player in the history of baseball where there's not one guy saying, don't do it. Of course there's going to be negative on every single guy, Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, whoever you want to name. I'm sure there was somebody back in the day that said that Babe Ruth sucked. So you can't sit in that seat and be afraid that it's going to go wrong. But a lot of times it goes wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I don't want Manny Machado. Don't Don't misread it.
But they put themselves in position. This was all part of the big plan.
Right.
That eventually they were going to take a whole bunch of money that they have not allocated very much of in the last couple of years.
They got the dough, baby.
They have the money to spend, and the plan all along was to spend it on one of these guys. I thought the headline from Rick Hahn talking to us here at Sox Fest a little bit over an hour ago was that he's going to be terribly disappointed if they do not land Manny Machado. So that, I think, is, you know, that says a lot. It's already really been clear out there how in the White Sox are on Manny Machado, but he's admitted that they're going to be disappointed if they don't get him.
So everybody's entitled to their process, right? And it'll be great if he signs here. And I'd like to be, I'd like to say again, if he doesn't, it'll be disappointing. But again, not the end of the world. Is there any part of you that's like, look, if you want to be a Chicago White Sox, just then make the move? You know, it just doesn't, on some level, I'm getting a little curious slash, I don't know, frustrated, disappointed, whatever. Like, if you, what's the hesitation? They clearly want you. This is a world-class city with a team that's got everything going for them. Talent coming on the way, financial flexibility, all of it. What's the holdup here, Manny?
Well, I think you've gotten into kind of a different conversation here as the opening ceremonies are about to get going here. But I think what you're getting into, Mark, is more of the bigger picture here with free agency and baseball. And it is hard to follow right now, I think, as a baseball fan. I mean, we want all of this to get done very, very, very quickly. And that's been the opposite case in baseball for really a few years now with these big free agents.
Just feels like the White Sox have their will you marry me ring out there for a long time now.
Oh, no question. But, you know, it's a complicated process. There's a lot more that goes into it than just the most money.
Than just Southpaw walking down the catway right now, throwing out T-shirts to all the fans. That's a good strong moves by Southpaw. Looks like he's got a lot of energy.
Well, you know, he's coming off the offseason. He's got plenty of energy. Come on, let's be honest here. So, we are getting ready for the opening ceremonies to get started here on WGN Radio as we carry Sox Fest coverage for you all weekend long here on WGN. And it always starts with a big opening ceremony. And Gene Honda will be introducing the players as they come through here momentarily.
Yeah, and I think you might be able to hear him distantly in the background right now, but at some point here we might hear Gene as well. But if not, we will tell you exactly what is going on here as the White Sox indeed will be introduced. And a lot of the young talent is around. Eloy, I know you talked to him down there. He seems like a young man ready to do some damage this year.
Yeah, and by the way, Eloy, his English has gotten a lot better, too. I mean, I remember talking to him last year at this time, and he would answer some of the questions in English. But this year, he was, like, trying to do as much as he can, and he's excited. And he was, you know, asked tough questions, like, do you want to be Rookie of the Year right away? And it's like, you know, it's a little too early to talk about awards, but he does have goals in terms of home runs, hitting for average, things like that. But you could tell, I mean, he's ready to go.
Just for the record, I know we're on the radio, but I think everybody should know that Adam Hogue and I right now are in the dark, in the ballroom. The lights have been turned down. Feels a little romantic in here. I just made you very uncomfortable with that comment, but it's just this is
all. I'm a romantic when it comes to baseball. You know this. In my Chicago White Sox. This is nothing new.
Yeah, so we are going to have perhaps a little spotlight situation here as the White Sox are going to be introduced. But to the Eloy part, however many games the White Sox win this year, you are going to be getting to see the future on display. And I think if nothing else, that in itself is super exciting because the talent's going to be out there this year and you're going to start to see this team come together. And nobody knows how many games they're going to win. Hopefully it'll be a lot, but regardless, it's going to be fun to see the product develop this year.
Well, I think Rick Hahn did a good job today of accurately setting expectations by both saying they expect to win more games this year, but also admitting as we had... Ooh, there's Gene Honda.
So with all that said, it's time to introduce a few members of our White Sox team, some of them on the field, some of them from off the field. We begin with the voices of White Sox baseball. From the radio side, former White Sox outfielder
DJ Darren Jackson.
And as you hear Gene Honda introducing DJ, a radio man, walking out getting the high fives.
And former All-Star pitcher, Ed Farmer.
Farmio looking better than ever, Hogue. Look at him.
I wonder which one of the golf games is in better shape right now here in January.
Ed Farmer strut.
From the television side, entering his fourth season, play-by-play announcer, Jason Benetti.
Jason does not get an off-season. He's been calling football and basketball games nonstop. But he's here for Sox Fest.
Rising star, Jason Benetti. If not rising, already there?
And he's already a star.
Cy Young Award winner, Steve Stone.
The Stone Pony. Following his partner down the aisle.
Now let's bring out a few faces who live in the hearts of all White Sox fans. Welcome our White Sox greats. During his 1971 All-Star campaign, he led the American League with 33 home runs, becoming the first White Sox player to finish his season as the American League home run champion. Melton, Bill Melton.
Hello, Bill Melton. The man speaks the truth about White Sox baseball, Bill Melton.
He does.
Right? We love having him on 720 WGN.
This year's Sox Fest exclusive item is a bobblehead of him paying tribute to the 10-year anniversary of his memorable home run robbing catch to protect Mark Burley's perfect game. Welcome outfielder, Dwayne Wise.
Now here's a guy that made the greatest catch in franchise history in a random game in July and will forever be part of this franchise.
It's incredible.
Of course, protecting Mark Burley's perfect game.
A three-time All-Star and a Gold Glove winner who spent 13 years on the South Side and the manager of the 2005 World Series champions, shortstop and manager, Ozzie Guillen.
It is so awesome to see Ozzie back.
It is. And Rick Hahn earlier pitching that Ozzie Guillen deserves to be a manager somewhere in baseball, which I 100% agree with.
There's no doubt.
And he played nine seasons in the major leagues and recently completed his 33rd and final season in the White Sox television booth. Known for his iconic catchphrases across three decades, welcome White Sox ambassador, the Hawk, Ken Harrelson.
All right, Mark, you teased this earlier, but we're going to have to put this out on social media, the white jumpsuit that Hawk is wearing today.
Hawk looks like he's about to go run the 440, the 800.
I mean, it kind of looks like a fashion show anyway, the way they have this set up with the runway. It's awesome. And
now,
I think
please
Hawk's
welcome
the
gentleman who's part of our executive team who works really hard all year long. Senior Vice President and General Manager, Rick Hahn.
Good ovation for Rick Hahn. White Sox fans appreciating the work he's doing trying to put this ball club together.
The right turn.
Well, whether they end up with Machado or not, I mean, you got to appreciate the effort. The fact that they've done this much work.
Now it's time to welcome the 2019 Chicago White Sox coaching staff. Entering his 28th season in the organization, assistant pitching coach Kurt Hassler.
And yes, that was Manny Chance in the background as Rick Hahn was walking down the runway.
Very predictable. I approve.
100%.
Entering his fourth season in the organization as assistant hitting coach, Greg Sparks.
Man behind the scenes. Doing a lot.
Hilarious guy, by the way.
Hysterical. Does a lot of good work, with the White Sox hitters.
Entering his seventh season as the first base coach, former White Sox outfielder, Daryl Boston.
We'll be talking with Daryl tomorrow.
That's right. With one of the panels here at Sox Fest, first rounders of Daryl Boston and Michael Kopech, part of that one, too.
Well, Zach Collins, it's going to be fun.
Going out 24 years in the Sox organization, third base coach, Nick Capra.
My favorite thing about Nick Capra is every White Sox home game, he always goes up to the guy who they honor from the military.
Yes.
Gives him a handshake, makes a point of doing it. It's a very cool moment.
Entering his 12th season in the organization and third as bench coach, Joe McEwing.
Last year when David Wright went into the retired, Joe McEwing had me film a video that he wanted to deliver to David Wright.
Now in his sixth year with the club, hitting coach Todd Steverson.
It's going to be a pretty fun job working with all these young hitters. You think he's excited to have Eloy come up?
Maybe just a little.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
One of the very best in the game, pitching coach Don Cooper.
Legend.
Coop will be joining us on White Sox Weekly, a special edition at 7 o'clock right here on 720 WGN.
Good bounce to the step for Coop.
Always fun on the radio.
Entering his third season at the helm and fourth with the organization, your manager, Rick Renteria.
Good ovation for Ricky. I love seeing that. Ricky's got to be excited with the talent coming, man.
You can tell. I mean, just some of the time that went by last year. You just, everyone gets impatient, right? So, I think there's a video here for a couple minutes, so we'll kind of fill in the blanks if we could have that turned down. But what were some of your takeaways, too, from downstairs as we get through this video here for a couple minutes inside the Continental Ballroom?
So, you know, we had Nicky Delmonico on White Sox Weekly last week, and, you know, was asking about Machado, and these guys were talking about how they're working out in Arizona, and that's the talk around the cage, and they're excited, and they want him, and Nicky played against him in high school, and then I brought up shortstop, and a lot of the rumors on Machado is that he wants to play short. And the White Sox have a shortstop who played an excellent short last year, and Tim Anderson made a huge...
Well, and got better throughout the year.
Right. I mean, it was
a lot better.
It was a huge quantum leap. So it's just interesting that they all want Machado, and they're also respecting their guy. And nobody knows what the conversations are with the White Sox and Machado about is he demanding to play shortstop. But outside of all that, just the attitude downstairs, it just seems like a bunch of guys that really enjoy being around each other. They're throwing bags, you know, they're kidding around. It just seems to me, as it seemed for a long time now in that clubhouse, that there's just great chemistry. I don't know if you... I'm assuming you agree with all that.
No, I do, but I what I was about to get to there with Ricky, too, is, like, this kind of patient waiting game. I think it can sometimes be a little awkward at the major league level because they, as much as these players like Tim Anderson and Nicky Delmonico are excited about what's coming, you know, it's only human nature, too, to ask their own questions about, okay, if you sign Manny Machado and he wants to play shortstop, what does that mean for me?
Right.
And Nicky Delmonico's playing outfield. There's a lot of outfielders coming through the system, too. So all of that is completely fair. It's just human nature. But I think they've all been handling it very, very well.
Yeah, and these guys are professionals. They're Major League Baseball players, and they'd love to be White Sox. But if they're
the top farm systems in the majors,
you know, you're also auditioning for all the other teams too.
A 2015 draft pick, he was named to the Southern League midseason All-Star team with the Barons last season. Catcher Zebby Zavala.
Zebby is an interesting prospect coming up the system because he doesn't get all the talk that some of the other guys do, but he's really been coming on strong defensively and with his bat.
Coming off a season in which he earned a spot as an outfielder in the Futures game during the MLB All-Star festivities, outfielder Luis Alexander Basabe.
Moving his way up the system.
Yeah. People are kind of forgetting the third part of the Chris Sale trade, and an important part. That was a big reason why that deal ended up getting done.
Pretty much every single
ranked
day.
Number 11
we're
in our system by MLB Pipeline. Outfielder Miker Adolfo.
Stay healthy, Miker. A lot of talent right there. battled a lot of injuries.
The 10th overall selection in the 2016 MLB Amateur Draft, who's ranked number 8 in our organization by MLB Pipeline, catcher Zach Collins.
So Zach, Rick Heim was telling us earlier, really improved defensively last year. Everyone's known about his bat. That's why he was first-round pick. So you kind of got that battle between Sebi and Zach Collins going on. And then at the major league level, of course, they signed James McCann.
Coming off his stellar play in the Arizona Fall League and MLB Pipeline's number 4 prospect in our organization, Luis Robert.
Many, many people are high on Luis Robert, including you, Adam Hogue, who I believe you said something to me downstairs that you're optimistic on his future.
I saw him play one game in Arizona last year. It was the game he ended up getting hurt.
In last year's draft, he was the second highest second baseman to ever be drafted at number 4 overall. He's currently the number 5 prospect in the Sox organization, infielder Nick Madrigal.
How soon will Nick Madrigal fly up through the White Sox system and be a contributor in that infield?
All he does is hit. Hit, hit, hit. He just walked by us. Doesn't look like a Major League Baseball player. He's so small. But all he does is hit, and that's what they envision him
last season, he was named MLB Pipeline's Minor League Pitcher of the Year after going 12-2 and goes into 2019 as the top pitching prospect in the Sox organization. Dylan Cease.
Yeah, Dylan's taking over for Michael Kopech as the guy who will constantly be getting questions all year long. When is he coming up? When is he coming up? Rick Hahn telling us earlier, he's pretty much on the same trajectory as Michael Kopech. So I think you can expect him to come up at some point in the middle of this season.
Dylan Cease,
rated the top prospect in the Sox organization and MLB Pipeline's number 3 overall.
Here comes Eloy.
Outfielder,
get ready for
Eloy
this
Jimenez.
The man has presence. There's no doubt about it. He's got a little Sox ski hat on, staying warm, and wearing that big 74. 40 homers this year, what do you think?
You know, I think you're kidding, but it's possible.
Okay, I was kidding. I'll give a real answer. 32?
Now,
I
mean, please welcome members of your Chicago White Sox. This southpaw appeared in 59 games, striking out 70 and held batters to a 194 batting average. Number 57, Jace Fry.
You know, Jace came up last year. You could see him. He belonged right away. And, you know, he has the potential to be a part of the pen for a long time in a big role.
Got a chance to close a couple games last year, too.
He played at 6 different positions last season, including left, center, and right field, second base, shortstop, and third base, posting a .977 fielding percentage. Utility player number 28, Leury Garcia.
Valuable guy on the club.
He plays so many positions so well. You want him to be a little bit more consistent sometimes with the hitting and the base running and things like that, but all the talent.
A Gold Glove finalist who loves robbing opponents of home runs. Center fielder, number 15, Adam Engel.
Adam Engel just leaped over the wall and made another amazing catch.
Yeah, there's a big curtain they walk out of. He just jumped over it.
Adam Engel, a guy I root for. Good, good dude.
He led the team in home runs last season with 27 and was second in RBIs with 67. Outfielder, number 18, Daniel Hulka.
I'm really interested to see, you know, if he can duplicate what he did last year. There's going to be adjustments made by pitchers. Can he keep hitting for the same type of power and slugging that he did last year?
He almost was kind of a cult hero walking out right there. A lot of people giving Hulka some
now entering
some
his
love
third
there.
Season with the club.
Hulkamania.
Left fielder,
hashtag
number 30, Nicky Delmonico.
Injury-plagued year last year for Nicky.
Yeah, another guy you want to root for. I mean, he does everything right. We've seen him have the ability to hit, come up with clutch hits. Still kind of adjusting the outfield. That wasn't the position he came up with. He was a third baseman.
This right-hander started 32 games and led all White Sox starters with an ERA of 3.91. Number 40, Reynaldo Lopez.
Another guy Can he get even better than last year? You would think he would, but he was pretty consistent all year long.
His stuff belongs. There's no question.
100%.
Just coming out and be consistent every single time.
This 6'6" right-hander started 32 games last year and led the team in wins. Number 27, Lucas Giolito.
Again, consistency. Ricky Renteria talking to us a little earlier about how, you know, some pitchers, they struggle a little bit in the first inning, then they settle down. They want to see Giolito come out of the gate faster in some of his games.
His second half was way better than his first. Lucas Giolito's a guy that works at it.
One of the newest members of the team who had a career-high 83 RBIs last season, first baseman number 17, Yonder Alonso.
He goes from headache to the White Sox to a member of the White Sox. And I'm really interested to see the split that ends up happening between him and Jose Abreu at first base.
That'll be a good challenge for Ricky.
Infielder led the team last season in games played with 155, at-bats with 600, hits with 145, and triples with 10. Number 5, Yolmer Sanchez.
Yolmer Sanchez, the only White Sox player I ever saw get into a duffel bag.
And dump a whole thing of Gatorade on his own head.
You gotta love the energy. Yolmer's a valuable guy.
This right-hander started 4 games in 2018, striking out 15 batters in 14 innings. Number 34, Michael Kopech.
Michael Kopech will also be joining us on White Sox Weekly, which starts at 7 o'clock tonight, right here on 720 WGN. And he's always good to talk to, and I can't wait to talk to him about what's been going on in his life
in
the last few months.
His first full season of the majors, he played in all but 13 games, leading the team in walks and ranking second in runs scored. Second baseman, number 10, Yoan Moncada.
Here we go, Yo-Yo. Less strikeouts and just a uptick on the overall production. I think Yoan's going to have a huge year.
Well, he's highly motivated.
This speedy infielder led the team in stolen bases last season with 26 and finished with 20 home runs and 28 doubles. Shortstop number 7, Tim Anderson.
Tim Anderson spent the winter in Chicago building up that brand, giving back to the community. Very much wants to be a big part of the city. And then there's the on the field, too.
Those are solid numbers for a shortstop.
This slugging first baseman is coming off his second All-Star selection and second Silver Slugger Award. Number 79, Jose Abreu.
And maybe the most beloved member of this franchise entering the final year of his contract. It'll be very interesting what happens with Jose Abreu. But the model of consistency in baseball. I mean, when he had that minor slump last year, it was like, no one could really explain it. It's like, this never happened. And then he got over it pretty quick. Had another great year.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to introduce 4 legends who are joining us today. All have earned Hall of Fame honors. The 1972 American League Rookie of the Year and 11-time All-Star ranks in the franchise's top 8 for games played, home runs, runs batted in, extra base hits, total bases, and most 20 home run seasons. Carlton Fisk.
Pudge back at the convention. Wants to take on Deion Sanders right now. Love Pudge.
He was one of the first guys that I fell in love with as a White Sox fan.
82.7 stolen base percentage. And is one of the best switch hitters the game has ever seen. Tim Raines.
Rock Raines, Hall of Fame, baby.
Looks like he can still steal second base.
The great leadoff man in the history of the game. And yes, I don't know if he'd agree with that.
One of the most fierce sluggers in the game. He hit the ball out of the park once every 13 at-bats, ranking 8th all-time in Major League history with 612 home runs.
Jim Thome.
You know, guys that do that, one out of every 13 at-bats, that's incredible. Those are the guys you cannot wait to come to the ballpark and see. Because it's just anytime they come to bat.
MVP person, too.
Oh, yeah.
How do you say anything bad about Jim Thome? Like, literally, no
I don't
one...
think I've ever heard anyone right. say anything bad about him.
So good, so humble. And I think the newest Hall of Famer is about to get some love right now.
Last month, White Sox great Harold Baines received the call of a lifetime that he'd been elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Baines was selected by the Chicago White Sox with the first overall pick in the 1977 draft. He went on to play 22 seasons in the majors, in which he hit .289 with 488 doubles, 49 triples, 384 home runs, 1,628 RBIs, 1,299 runs scored, and 1,062 walks in 2,830 games. He received the 1989 American League Silver Slugger Award for designated hitters and finished in the top 10 of the American League MVP voting in 1983 and 1985. Baines is also the only player in Major League history to make at least 1,000 appearances as a designated hitter and 1,000 or more in another position, with 1,061 in the outfield. A member of the White Sox Team of the Century, he ranks among the franchise all-time leaders in the following categories: third in home runs, fourth in RBIs, fourth in extra base hits, fifth in doubles, sixth in slugging percentage, sixth in hits, tied for seventh in games, eighth in runs scored, and 10th in OPS and walks. Baines was not only a clubhouse leader, but was one of the most clutch hitters in the game, posting a career .306 average with runners in scoring position. He is the 15th person in franchise history elected to the Hall of Fame. He's currently a White Sox ambassador and is still very involved within the organization. White Sox fans, give a round of applause for Sox legend and our newest Hall of Famer, number 3, Harold Baines.
What a cool moment for Harold. I'm sure he thought that ship had sailed.
He went back in just to get the ovation twice. I like it.
One of the greatest leg kicks in the history of baseball,
oh, yeah.
Right?
The emotion that he had, and him talking about his dad, just the impact his dad had on him, his love for the game of baseball, all that coming out after he was named to the Hall of Fame, that was some really cool stuff.
No doubt, and just the fact that he was drafted here.
A round of applause for all of our White Sox players, our alumni, our broadcasters, and staff. It's our first error of the season. That's bad. We have one more tradition to take care of. The first pitch goes to our fans, and it comes from our players here at Sox Fest. Are you ready? Gentlemen, are you ready? Pick up the grounder. One, two, three, let's open the doors.
Baseball's in the air.
So the players are all tossing what I believe are more like stress balls than actual baseballs at the fans.
That would have been more fun if I was at
Yeah. Now they're walking through, tossing, you know, those foam balls out to the fans, and that's the official first pitch of Sox Fest. Technically the first pitch of 2019 for the Chicago White Sox.
Off and rolling. Spring training, of course, coming up, and opening day right around the corner. We should send it on back to the studio and get us a news update.
Yep. Well, Sox Fest is officially underway. Rokan, Anna Navantes, the whole crew are going to be right here with the rest of the coverage until 7 o'clock, and then we'll have White Sox Weekly from 7 to 8 8 o'clock as well. Coverage all night long.
The latest winter storm is producing skating rink conditions.
Time to think about baseball, hot dogs, and summer wins.
Talk about swimming. Sox win. Sox win.
The Rokan Show with Anna DeVontis is live from Sox Fest 2019. From the 27th Annual White Sox Fan Convention at Hilton, Chicago, here's Ro and Anna on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy.
Yes.
We are coming to you live from Sox Fest 2019 at the Hilton, Chicago.
Woo!
And I got to say, you know, this is interesting. We are joined by two of the biggest Sox fan journalists in Chicago. Mr. Richard Roper, who is infamously a White Sox fan because during their great run in the mid-2000s, Mr. Roper was on every documentary and every story nationally about the White Sox.
Sometimes George Wendt wasn't available, so they'd have to go to me, and I appreciate it.
Right. And Kevin Powell, who I know is a journalist. He's a sports journalist. He is supposed to maintain his own journalistic integrity during moments like this.
Yes.
But he can't help himself.
No, I can't.
I can't. Right across from us here in Salon B, they do a cool thing. It's the White Sox Charities Garage Sale, which is a bunch of just random, weird Sox swag, old jerseys, players that played for the Sox for like 45 minutes, and you can find their jersey. You can actually get Michael Kopech's the dirt from his
dirt.
From his
pitching mound,
pitching mound dirt for $25. You could have your very own bottle. I'm going to buy all of it and then use it for my pitching mound in my backyard. It'll be a full Kopech mound.
And they're actually selling game-worn pants. And I got dibs on the Moncada pants over there, by the way.
Are the game-worn pants, so they look game-worn? Like
they have the grass
stains and everything on them? Okay.
The tobacco stains and everything.
They got, you name it, a lot of game-used bats. Even some shoes, although Kev tried to get into Jose Abreu's size 16. Teams. Like one of those body shrinking movies. But, you know, the great thing about this is I can tell you this is a White Sox fan. Every White Sox fan who has ever lived has had a garage sale at least once every summer.
So true.
So we love going to garage sales as well.
You never know what you're going to find.
Treasure.
Pick up.
They're experts.
Treasure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So can I go back to the dirt on the mound for just a second? We were at that game, were we not?
Yes.
That game was great for the first, like, what did he get, an inning and a half in before the skies opened up? A
couple innings in.
Yeah.
He was completely drenched before that from all the adrenaline he had from, you know, just from sweat. But he was flinging it at, what, about 97?
Seriously.
And, you know, had some great stuff.
I'll never forget the crowd that surrounded his bullpen warm-up session. That was like a rock star walking through a crowd of diehard fans because it was like 20 rows deep around the bullpen where he warms up. When we look back on this rebuild, that's a moment we'll look on, you know, is the Kopech debut night.
I think that's why we all felt a need to be out there to see it. I had no idea, though, they were going to monetize the dirt. I mean, that's a shocker.
They got to fund the Machado contract somehow.
And the Harper one as well.
I'm going to do DNA testing on the dirt and see if I can find any, what I might find in that. I don't know. Before it's all said and done. But this, you know, it is interesting walking around the Fan Fest here. It's a total different vibe than you get at the two other major fan fests in Chicago, right?
Yes.
Between the Hawks and the Cubs. And Sox fans are, they're passionate at a different level, I think.
Yes. That's absolutely true. That's why, you know, you look at the weather. There's already a huge crowd here. Something like the weather would not stop a single White Sox fan from coming down here this weekend. They'd go, what do you mean? Why would I? What?
It doesn't occur to them.
They're out there. They're actually shoveling in front of the Hilton and putting the chairs down for dibs.
I saw four cars in the lot that had plows on them already.
Yeah. And my uncle Pete's coming in
Sox
later.
I think for me, it feels different because White Sox fans have never really experienced this where they're building something that's sustainable for a long time. It's not going to be a year or 2 years. This is a monster Rick Hahn is building with the farm system, the amount of talent they have, and they're still acquiring talent. It feels like this is going to be something that's sustainable for 5 years, for 6 years. I mean,
I hate to even mention, but the team from the north side, look what they've done now.
Right.
But it's the same process, yeah. And teams are doing this. So when you can build a farm system, it changes the outlook of your franchise for years and years to come.
And it speaks to the enthusiasm of Sox fans,
right,
that this was sold out so early and that there's so much, just so much excitement around this team.
Well, that's the beauty of baseball as a sport, too, because if you look at the other sports, you really have to wait for college drafts. Hockey, you know, people don't follow the minor league system or the up-and-coming system that much. Football and basketball, you don't know who they're going to get till, you know, it's one or two players. But in baseball, you could watch the progress of the prospects for 2, 3,
right,
4 years, which baseball fans love to do. Mm-hmm. So when they get a kid at 18 or 19, they're like, did you see what so-and-so did at AA or AAA?
Right.
So you feel like they're part of the White Sox family before they ever set foot at 35th and Shields.
Well, and again, you know, it goes back to, you see teams that have been famously rebuilding, right? You know, you saw Theo Epstein do it twice, once in Boston, once
look at the Astros.
Yeah. Right, the Astros. Mm-hmm. You watch these guys, and they basically burn down the team. Steve Stone told us last year, this is going to be ugly. Mm. We're just going to have to get through it, and you're going to like the results on the other side. And now in this would be the third season, essentially, of the rebuild. You're going to start to see people come up. You're going to see Eloy Jimenez. We're going to be talking with Jason Benetti coming up after 5 o'clock.
Cool.
About him and the excitement that people have about him, about Luis Robert. A little dampened slightly because he got hurt last season, and yeah. So it's delayed a little bit his coming up to major leagues. Yeah, he will probably be up for a visit at least this season, but probably not going to be a fixture. Eloy Jimenez will be, though, mm-hmm. And people are going to watch him. There will be pitchers who will stop and think to themselves, what else can I do? See, this guy makes contact under any and all circumstances.
It's fun. He's here at Sox Fest, and it's fun to talk to people who had just met him in person for the first time. Mm-hmm. Ernie, our engineer, went and saw him. He comes back like with this look on his face. He goes, Eloy Jimenez is a monster. I'm like, I know. And he's got this little baby face, but he's huge. And he hits the ball a mile.
It's like Frank Thomas. The first time I remember seeing Frank Thomas for the first time at the old Comiskey Park, yeah, when they were about to tear it down, last home game there,
yeah,
and Frank Thomas got up, and I thought to myself, the same concept I had when I was a kid and I saw Andre Dawson for the first time was like, how do you pitch to the, if you're a pitcher, mm-hmm, you know, because I played a little ball, seventh grade, I was a pitcher.
You did that too?
Yep, it'd blow up my shoulder, I'd be right in seventh grade. And I thought, you know, if you stand up there and you're thinking, okay, what am I going to do here, right? How do you do the math?
Yeah.
There is no math. Right? Yeah. You're literally looking at a guy that is like superhuman looking. And he just, where do you go? And he's going to be an absolute fan favorite. You're going to also, this season, whoever they get. I know there's going to be an interview that Mr. Hahn, the general manager of the White Sox, he sat down with one Kevin Powell.
Yes, K-Powell.
For an intimate conversation, while we were having an intimate conversation with Mark McKinnon from the
circus on Showtime,
and what's going to happen on Sunday concerning what happened in Washington, and simultaneously, we couldn't get both on the air. You will hear this conversation with Rick Hahn, cool, and he says something. I won't give it away yet, but he says something that I think White Sox fans are going to go nuts over.
Wow.
In a good way, not in a bad way.
Because,
you know, fans can go nuts in a bad way,
the other too. Yeah, yeah. Got to remember who you're dealing with here.
Tee that up correctly, right.
Well, I also have a game plan just for a little bit of excitement. The White Sox should find any young kid whose name happens to be Harper Machado. And then just find Harper Machado and sign him. And then when people see the headline, they won't notice there's no comma. They'll say, oh, my gosh, Sox signed Harper Machado.
5-2 a player.
I think
Bill Veeck would have loved that one.
Let's face it. I mean, we're getting to the end here, and a bunch of other teams have made moves that make Machado or Harper is sort of less likely, right, to those teams. And there's two teams left that have wide openings, and there's two players left.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of it's becoming the norm now in baseball where these free agencies. I mean, remember Jake Arrieta didn't sign until like the day before pitchers and catchers reported last year, and I think some fans are getting a little frustrated. I mean, you want to see where these guys land,
but that didn't go well for Jake Arrieta. You know, I mean,
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, we've seen reports of what is being offered to guys like Machado and Harper, and it's well below what we thought. And like the new collective bargaining agreement discussions are going to be coming up here in a couple of years. You might see some changes to how things are done in the off season, but we've seen a wide range of numbers in years for Machado, and I think teams are just kind of getting smarter. I mean, you can't keep handing out these $300 million contracts and completely screwing up your payroll for years to come.
I have to disagree with you for just a second. As you know, somebody who's been in a contract dispute or two in his career, I'd like to say that these teams are getting short-sighted, is what I would say, because the money that they can make back. But there is an opportunity. I mean, you know, this one guy does not make a team.
Right.
But when you put a guy like Harper or Machado, although we seem to have hired half of the Machado family now,
it's a good sign.
Right, leaning a little toward him, I would
imagine.
Like,
come on, but, how can you say no?
I mean, what's his cousin going to do when he's not talking to, you know, and Bryce Harper standing there? I don't know. But the point is that this is these young guys who are coming up, who are going to be world beaters, you know, and that are going to be with the team for, you know, multiple years going forward.
And that gives the White Sox the luxury, and people like going into this. People are like, well, they're just dismissing the White Sox. I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't dismiss the White Sox here, because the core of their team, you have control of these guys for 5-6 years. You don't have to pay them a ton of money. That gives you a luxury now where Manny Machado could potentially be 75% of your payroll, and that's fine because the rest of the guys aren't making all that much money. They're rookies. They're 2 year, been in the league for 2 years, 3 years. When this all started, I'd say the White Sox are absolutely going to be in on these guys. And some people dismiss them for whatever reason. But they're right there. I'd say the White Sox are one of two finalists probably for Machado right now.
So who's the other, Kev?
Probably the Phillies.
And all you got to do is just, you know, just say Philadelphia and then say Chicago.
Right. I mean, come on. Come
right.
On.
No contest.
Come on, Manny. I love you here.
I even know how to do a steak right up here.
Right.
Let's just start trashing Philly to Machado.
Well, we should.
I mean,
look what they did to us.
You know, Philadelphia's on my list.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, just it's always kind of been on my list, but after the early part of January, I didn't want to talk about it. Do we have to talk about it?
No, do not.
They handled that with their usual lack of class and graciousness.
Yes.
And it's just a shame they didn't continue on too much past that. And
Such a shame.
The other thing too is, don't you want to? If you're a hitter, you want to play in the American League. You know, you got after 10 straight days, you want to take it easy. They can let you DH for a day. You know, in the American League, you can't do that with the Phillies.
I'm with you.
Come on, Manny. Think it through.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah, see? That's a good part of the pitch.
Got to appeal. So you're going to have a better batting average in the American League than you are in the National League. That's just flat out.
It's a home run friendly park too on the south side, Manny.
Balls fly out of there.
That's right.
This is Chicago. Fences can be moved if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
We don't need the fences.
It's 310 to left when Manny's up. 270 to dead center.
Get our guys out there.
We know a guy on the south side. He can make it happen.
It's funny because I think it was it the Sun-Times that did that that did that chart of where his they charted his home runs from last year and where they would have, his hits from last year and where they would have been in the rate.
Yeah.
Where how many more home runs he would have had.
That's a good chart.
That's interesting.
There you go, Manny.
That fly ball to left field in a lot of ballparks. Boom, third row. Yeah. Fireworks go off.
And, you know, we did have reports that Rick Hahn has talked about it, where they did part of their pitch to these free agents is look at what we have in the farm system. Right. You can be a part of something huge here.
Right. And what does Philadelphia have? They got bad attitudes.
Totally.
Rocky 9 coming out. That's it.
Cheesesteaks. That's it.
Cheese on your steak.
And
what are you doing?
That good. Have you ever had a cheesesteak? Cheesesteak makes
ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it's about your. I get the 2-minute warning about 15 minutes in.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's got a combination in there. I'm not quite sure what that combination is, but it's sort of it's butter cheese and then whatever they're using and then the onions on top. Look out.
That's on the same list as the Indian food for you.
Yes. Well, that's but
different
I use,
list.
I use that medicinally though, the Indian food. That's what I like about
clear the system.
Yes, it's exactly how I do it. And in a delicious way, Kev. Thank you for asking. Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. We are broadcasting live from Sox Fest 2019.
All right. Nice.
Uh-oh, look who just stepped into the Salon B here. Look to your right, Ro. Certain 34, certain Michael Kopech. Looking good, looking sharp. He's got the beard going.
Got the flow out of the back of the head.
We should have him sign our pitching mound dirt.
Yes. Can you sign my dirt, Mr. Kopech?
The best thing ever.
I just bought it at the garage sale.
He goes over there and they don't let him in because he doesn't have the right pass.
Yeah, I went to go buy Yoan Moncada's game-worn pants, and the guy's like, you can't get in here until noon tomorrow. I don't make the rules, buddy.
Hey, it's Sox Fest. You know, you don't mess with him.
He wouldn't let me in.
Well, they're letting
right,
the fans are
fans
in,
can go
but
in.
If you're a working member of the press here, now that's a White Sox move there.
It's a South Side.
You want to get all right, fancy pants.
Exactly.
Right. I don't know who you think you is, but you're not getting in here right now. You hear me?
Tired South Side cop, security guard. He's not messing around.
I had my eye on that Adam Dunn bat that had been broken in 27 places, and that's when he swung and missed. It's a beauty over there. I thought that'd be a nice piece of artwork for my living room. I'm gonna get that.
Big heck, no contact, Adam Dunn.
Hey, now, watch out.
Oh, hey, now.
Hey. Come on.
You hit 175 one year in the big leagues, buddy boy. But that's the past. We're talking about the future.
The future. That's right. It is really cool, this garage sale. There's a ton of awesome stuff in there.
What a cool idea. I'm surprised we haven't seen that. I've never seen that before. Yeah. The festivals.
If you're a ball player, they really do have White Sox players game-worn spikes that are in really great shape. They're not like they're, you know, I mean, they may be worn for a couple of games. Now, you have to be a size 16 if you want to wear Jose Abreu spikes. Right. But,
I don't know if there's 10.5s out there.
Yeah,
I just don't kind of see it out there.
10.5 narrow.
10.5 narrow. I'm sorry. Do you have anything that puts a little bit more of a rounded toe?
Oh, my gosh.
That's not how garage sales work, Ro. You can't be so specific.
I have bunions, so it's a little wider through the toes.
And a row has a whole different. He thought they actually sold the garage when he drove by those as a kid. How could they have one this year? Didn't they sell the garage last year? Where did they do? What did they do with the stables?
Rose garage sales had Rolexes.
Yeah, I'd go to that one.
Yeah, Coach purses.
Miss that one.
Garage sales. Yeah, so there was a little. Yeah,
they call them estate sales. Actually, exactly. In the right neighborhoods.
Only after a very old aunt dies, I'm getting my hand on that china.
Uh-huh. Very different. Get there at 7 a.m. First pick.
You should have seen the crystal champagne flutes from Louis Tiffany. All right. Here's what we're going to do. Coming up, we are going to start Sox's. We're working the top five in a fun way today.
Okay.
We're going to take the top five, and we are going to spread it out.
All right.
Over these next 2 hours. Because
cool.
It is top five greatest moments as we see them in Sox history.
Oh.
Love it.
Great
that we
idea.
Have associated with.
Beautiful.
So we are going to be playing those through this time. We're going to talk to Jason Benetti next. He is the voice of the television play-by-play guy for the White Sox, who Great. Is, to my ear, the best local. I would put him up against the national guys.
Yeah.
Baseball play-by-play guy working in America today. He is.
He's the best young talent, I think.
Oh.
Maybe in any sport, certainly in baseball.
And he's well.
And he does other sports, actually. You hear him all the time.
You hear him doing basketball. You hear him doing football. He just did
He's always in my living room. I put a game on, and I was like, that's Jason covering that basketball game. It's cool.
So Jason will be joining us coming up in just a few minutes.
Hello?
We're going to 1, 2, 3, 4.
Back to the party at Hilton Chicago. Sox Fest 2019 now on 720 WGN.
Better day in this year or almost any year to think about baseball than today.
Oh, it warms the heart just a little bit.
Oh, is going on outside right now. It is just not so good. Don't look outside. Think about Boys of Summer. Think about the green grass at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Mm-hmm.
Think about Eloy Jimenez going up to the plate. Think about the first pitch out of the park over the top. Think about the next batter up, Manny Machado.
Oh.
Think about this. I want to think about that for just a second.
The smell of the Polish sausage and onions
wafting
through.
And then the cleanup man, Bryce Harper. Let's just think about that for a second.
Think about the vendor in left field saying, two more Modellos, Mr. Roper, you sure? It is the top of the seventh. Okay.
You're Guided Uber at home, right?
On the Rokan Show.
That was nice. Nice painting of a picture.
Thank you, Jason Benetti, who paints great pictures.
He does.
For the Chicago White Sox. He is, and I've been saying this since we've been talking about you. I've been talking about you for the last year on the air. To me, I am such a geek about broadcasters and broadcasting and sports broadcasters, especially because it's such a unique, really tough field to be in. Everybody thinks they could do it. It is really, really, really hard. And I don't think there's a better local television play-by-play guy in baseball than Jason Benetti.
Mm-hmm.
at a very young age, and I believe that now that Vin Scully has passed away, by far, he hasn't passed away. I just killed him. Look at what I
just
said.
Oh, boy.
That's new information
to me. I was in wonderful health, and I'm not.
Vin Scully, to me, was my favorite of all times, and you are now my favorite of all times.
Oh.
You just make everything feels warm and fuzzy. Pat Summerall used to do that to me, too. It was like this sort of sound like everything's going to be okay, and you do that. You're so great at it.
Well, that's so kind of you to say, and I was just talking with Rick Hahn, actually, and a couple friends of mine about the strange ways people have, like, in the building where I live or, like, out around the city, have brought up Manny Machado to me. You actually win the prize for oddest walk-up about Manny Machado. Because I was in, like, this mode. I was basically in, like, baseball Puerto Vallarta. And you, like, put me there, and then it was like, Manny Machado. Which is awesome. You win the prize for the thing I was just talking about. I am having a medal manufactured, but I can't give it to you yet because it would be tampering.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah,
I understand. But his first walk up to the plate, you've already got it in your head?
I'm ready to go for anybody that shows up.
Very well
I think,
said, yes.
Right?
I understand.
Of course. Maybe?
Of course.
I don't know. I'm saying that, but I don't know that that's true.
As you think about this, all right, so when you're preparing, and you think about the biggest of games, right? Important, like Michael Kopech is about 15 yards away from us right now, signing autographs.
Where?
And Kopech is the first Kopech game, and they're selling the dirt from the mound over here at FanFest, which is really, I think it's the funniest thing
beautiful?
I've ever seen at a FanFest.
I love it.
And there was so much excitement about him, and there was such this moment. And you know, obviously now, we're not going to see him for another year, but you know, the new and improved version of him. But there's so much hope. What were you thinking that game?
So a bunch of years ago, I had Steven Strasburg in AAA as he was coming up through the minors, the Washington Nationals phenom. And when Strasburg pitched for us in AAA, the Syracuse Chiefs at the time was us. He would show up, and people would drive in from Pennsylvania to Central New York to see Strasburg pitch. And I called Ian Eagle, who is one of the best on the planet at play-by-play. He does CBS work. He does the Nets. He does the NCAA tournament. He's fantastic. And Ian basically said to me, don't oversell him. He'll sell himself. And so what I was thinking was, let Michael Kopech show the world what he does and caption it. But you don't need to tell people that his fastball is a fast fastball. You need to tell people maybe what it means. But it's not my job to make him into a superhuman because, frankly, he does that himself. Right. So that was rolling around from years ago my mind.
Excellent.
That's part of the art of what you do, Jason. And I would imagine in that same vein, you don't think too much in advance about it, making one of those calls that's going to stand for history because, as you know, of course, better than anyone, the best ones just came from that moment when you're reacting as a professional but also as an eyewitness to history.
Yeah, I think if you guarantee yourself that you're going to say something in a certain moment, you're going to do it some sort of injustice. I think it would be unfair to the person to not mull over what he means to the game and what this moment means to a fan base beforehand. Like, that had been rolling around in my mind, but it wasn't, I need to do X. Right. It was, gee, I wonder what the context is for me, for him to be here today. Right. And let that kind of simmer in my mind, and then whatever comes out from all of the information I have about him will go.
Gotcha. I think that's really the hallmark. Back to you for a second here. The hallmark of your work, which is so amazing, is you take the viewer into, you know, you become that the inner voice of the viewer, and you find a way. And you know, and Steve Stone, who you know is one of my I've known for 1 trillion years, one of my favorite people on the planet. But he is a you know, I think he became Steve Stone, the great as a broadcaster, because he was able to he wanted to connect with parents of little kids playing the game and then connect with generations of kids about instruction and this is what you're seeing and this is what you're looking at. And this is why I think the two of you have been great together is that you then connect the fabric of the emotion of being in a ballpark at sunset
and, you know, watching these greats, people who will one day be in the Hall of Fame, and that, you know, as you go from you know, parent to child to parent to child, they want to tell that story, and you give them the context of that. It's really something.
Well, and Steve, you know, to Steve Stone for a second, we have seen a lot over the past 7 days, and very rightfully so, about Tony Romo and his crystal ball and calling out the plays that were coming in the Chiefs-Patriots game.
Right.
This is not to take away from Tony Romo, because he deserves every pot of money that people throw at him. Yeah. Steve Stone's been doing that for years.
Right. Incredible.
Absolutely. He will call out pitches before they happen, and that is, it takes, first of all, knowing that you're going to be right. It also takes guts to say this is going to happen. Not maybe it could be this or that. It's, hey, he's going to throw this here. And to Steve's credit, he's been doing that for years.
Right.
And if he were doing it on a national stage, we'd be hearing about it in the national media. Yeah. So I think Stoney deserves a lot of credit for his ability to anticipate, even sometimes with a guy that we've just gotten from the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Like, and he knows enough to be able to jump off that ledge with us and be right.
Absolutely. And Jason, not only saying, you know, we're going to see the, you know, the curveball, but he'll say, two pitches before that, look, if they set this guy up with an inside fastball and they throw it anywhere on the outside corner, or even in the dirt, he's done. And you know, whoever the batter is, because he's seen the tendencies on this hitter that he's gonna, you know, that he's gonna be backed off the plate, and then he's not gonna, then he's gonna lunge for something, and it plays out. You're like, am I on TiVo? Is this back in the day of TiVo? Am I?
It's actually terrifying. he'll give me like a little wink, and then we'll move on.
Wow,
and it's awesome.
Amazing.
It's really cool.
Jason, outside Eloy, which prospect gets you the most excited?
How come you took away Jimenez from me?
Well, because I had to. I knew you were going to go there. Everybody goes there.
Classic fantasy player over
here. No, Dylan Cease.
Yeah.
Dylan Cease. Yeah. Because having known him now for a year and a half or so, I like the makeup mentally. Like, Dad's a lawyer. He is a yoga meditation sort of guy. Yeah. He's a very centered person. And that may sound like intangible or like soft sports to some people. It really matters on the mound. Mm-hmm. Like, that dude knows who he is. And he's got a bionic arm. That combination of self-assuredness and the arm, to me, is a lethal pairing. And I like the guy. I think he's going to have great success. And you can tell that he's extremely confident in what he does. And you don't get that with every prospect. You just don't. Nick Madrigal is also very, very close. I know you only asked for one, and I'm like demolishing the question from the premise.
It's nice
that
to
was
have
original.
That embarrassment of riches.
Madrigal, I saw in a super regional a couple years ago. Oregon State played Vanderbilt, and there were a bunch of great players on that Oregon State team, including Rutschman, the catcher who's likely going to be the first pick, Adley Rutschman, this year, or one of the first picks. And I left that super regional with Mike Rooney, who was my analyst, and we both said afterward, like, Nick Madrigal's the best player. Jaron Kendall was there. He was in the discussion for the Sox pick at the time. And I was like, Madrigal, that guy. And Rooney, who actually knows the game, said that as well. And it's because of his plate discipline. That usually plays up through the minor leagues. So I think I would say Cease and Madrigal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I know, Kev, you didn't ask me the question.
Roe?
But
which prospect gets you most excited?
Luis Robert.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah, and when you see him here, if you're coming to convention this weekend, he looks like he could play linebacker for the Chicago Bears or free safety. I mean, the guy is just built like a house. He is ripped.
And what's crazy is you put him next to Mike or Adolfo, and Adolfo's like bigger than he is.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got some weapons here.
It is a change in baseball. And you talk about Steve Stone and that era from the 1970s in baseball and the conditioning of players from then, or the Babe Ruth era, the conditioning of players from then.
Or lack thereof.
Right.
The condition of players.
Right.
Yeah.
But the best players, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want to meet Stan Musial in an alley, right? I mean, he's wiry, but he could kill you, right? I mean, these guys are very physical.
Ted Williams.
Right, Ted Williams, big.
Bob
right?
Gibson. Yeah. You don't want to meet Bob Gibson.
Right, Bob Gibson. Those
terrifying.
These were, but you know, but we're talking about all the guys from that area that were of that you know that size and physicality. This is, you know, the game has changed so much now in terms of the physical nature of it, and guys wanting to stay in shape, and they come into, you know, you guys aren't showing up. They're not going to show up in a couple of weeks in Arizona out of shape. You can't afford it.
It's a year-round thing,
right?
You have to. But that's the fun part about baseball, though, is you don't have to be that size. Like somebody, we had an event last night for season ticket holders, and I was on stage with a bunch of the players, and somebody texted me a picture of me standing, like, in the same vicinity as Nick Madrigal, and the text said, like, you got 2 inches on him. And I feel bad for the guy because it's actually true. But the kid's an amazing talent, hand-eye coordination-wise. It's ridiculous how good he is at the game already, and to know that you can be, you know, David Eckstein is the guy that everybody holds up to say I can do this if I'm a smaller guy. But you know,
look at Altuve.
Nick could be him. Altuve too. Yeah, it's a great point. There's a new Eckstein, and he's better than Eckstein was.
It's such a fun sport. All right, so as we're getting ready for the season here, are there certain series you're targeting early on here that you're thinking about and thinking, you know, this is going to sort of tell the story of the season? Because I think Sox fans are very excited about, with reservation, right? Because it's not, the rebuild is not complete here. And we have to see still what other piece, if one comes, what it will be. But is there something, a moment where, you know, Cubs fans always point to, you know, a Cardinals series that changed the dynamics of the season, like an 84. Is there something that you're looking at that tells you where they really are?
It's a little cliche. I'm going to answer the question, but I need to know how you do to a coffee stopper what you did to the one that's in your hand. It's like it was oddly bent in a spot that I didn't think was actually
superhero
possible.
Strength.
I do origami.
Yeah,
it's my thing, and it's
real strong. Right,
yeah,
there.
Like really strange origami.
Yeah, that's what I do.
It looked like a flamingo. Really, you did a great job.
Thank you very much.
So,
by the way, I'm selling this with the Kopech dirt.
Okay.
Yeah, bring it over to the garage sale if you're allowed in.
Rose top. So I would say let's just play right now. Like I want the opening series to be here because I'm very excited about the possibilities. And honestly, too, with what Rick Hahn has talked about and the possibilities of who we might see this year, the series when Eloy Jimenez gets here.
Mm. Third week in potentially.
That seems potentially like it would be feasible time to do that. Yeah. I don't way above my pay grade,
right.
But yeah, that's what people are talking about.
Yeah.
The people, they're saying it.
That
who are they? They
are
always
saying,
say that.
Whispers in the
But that's the series. That's the series I'm excited about because the electricity for Kopech's first start.
Yeah.
Felt like a playoff game.
Sure.
And, yeah, and if Jimenez is anything like we think he's going to be, and I really, really do, even though I'm not allowed to, Kevin, I really, really think he's going to be that type of star and a crossover star as well, you know, in terms of the community here in Chicago and
sure.
all the people that he can connect with. That day, I'm ready. Let's go.
Wow.
Well, this is a franchise on great ascendance right now, and you're a part of it, and you're the voice of it, and you're going to be the person that the way that Harry was associated for so many years with, you know, the change and the greatness of a franchise. That's where Jason Benetti is going to be seen in the many decades to come in your work here with the White Sox. So thank you very much for what you do.
That's very kind of you. That usually is followed by the statement, no pressure.
Yes, no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah, don't worry
Go
about it.
Go get him.
Pressure.
Right.
We're
exactly.
all counting on you.
And if I could just get $20 for parking, that would really help. Thanks very much.
Give that stopper
stick.
To somebody. And amazing. It doesn't stop anything anymore.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Doesn't. I have high nerves, Jason.
Call your sons. Call your daughters. Call your friends. Call your neighbors.
You got to be kidding me.
Way back. Looks up, you can put it on the board. Yes!
Broadcasting live from Sox Fest 2019 at the Hilton, Chicago.
Yes.
We were just talking to Jason Benetti, who is one of the great young broadcasters in the game of baseball. And now Hawk Harrelson joins us. No one more associated with this team in broadcasting than Hawk Harrelson. And, Hawk, we were just talking about something off the air, and I want to bring it on the air for a second here.
Sure.
About the difference between, as you were coming up in the game of baseball, and the players then, and then the players now, and you said something I thought was fascinating, which is these guys are able to do things that a lot of guys weren't able to do.
Oh, they could do things we never even thought about doing.
All right, so let's talk about that. What specifically is the thing that surprises you the most?
Well, first of all, the overall talent. That's number one. These guys are, you know, as we were talking about, when my era, Latin players were very small guys. You know, like Louis Aparicio was the best shortstop I played against in my time zone. He's a little bitty guy, you know. Most of them are little bitty guys. Jose Cardenal and those guys. These guys today are monsters. Go up and I look in that hospitality suite we've got there. We got guys up there 6'5", 6'6", 250, 260, Latin guys who can run. I mean, who can play. And that's the reason that I'm so excited. I told Jason, I said, get ready to sit back, relax, and strap it down because you're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And he is. Jason is a beautiful, beautiful announcer and a beautiful, beautiful person.
He is.
And the Sox fans are going to love him for a very long time. And I'll tell you what, starting this year, this team's got a chance to be a little better than I thought it would be. You pick up guys like Yonder, and you pick up some other guys. Yonder is, I'm telling you what, he's dangerous. This guy is dangerous. And he's going to give Abreu a lot of protection. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's not talked about enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you take a guy like Bryce Harper. Whoever gets him better have a pretty good hitter behind him, yeah. Or else he's going to walk 140, 150 times a year.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that sort of peeves me a little bit because they're just talking about the man, the guy, the big guy. Well, the big guy, a lot of times, is a guy hitting behind him.
Right.
Who makes him get pitches to hit. So, I enjoy watching him play. You know, I love the game. I've been in almost 60 years now. And come January 1st of 2020, I'll be one of five guys that they can find. They can find four of them. I think there are more, but they can't find them. Who've been in this game all the parts of eight decades.
Wow.
Wow. I started in 1959, 17 years old. And you go back to that time and you think about how this game has changed. In fact, Fisk and Tommy and myself were just talking about it. It's really a different game than we played. It really is. And our guys, as I said, our good players would be good players today, but we just didn't have as many good players. You look at some of these kids today, they're just magnificent baseball players.
Is it the size, obviously, you already pointed to, speed and all of that.
Yeah.
But it's still, you still got to hit the ball. You still got to see. You still got to have that turn of turn of wrist, the forearm, all that. And the littler guys have that.
Yes.
But it seems that eye-hand coordination, like bigger athletes never had to worry about that so much because they were bigger. Now it's the training that is different, or is it just sort of, generation after generation?
Well, for the most part, it's a Latin influx and influence in the game. You got almost 40% of the players today are Latin. And I've been saying for a long time now that, I told Jerry, our owner, I said, in 10 years, I'm going back a few years, if in 10 years from now, you'll have half the managers in the big leagues who are Latin. Now, last year, 2 years ago, there was only one Latin manager in the major leagues, and we had him, Rick Renteria,
sure.
Who's a thoroughbred. This guy is going to be here a long time.
Yeah.
Now, this year, we had three. We got Rick, Alex Cora in Boston, and Davey Martinez in Washington. So people are starting to understand now with the influx of the Latin talent that's coming in. Nothing, and a lot of these guys really don't speak good English. I am very much partial to Latin players. I've always loved Latin players because of where they came from, how hard they had to work to get there. And they were always, back in those days, we didn't have free agency, and the owners would absolutely, we were just a chattel. And what they would do is they would take it out mostly on Latin players. They would pay them peanuts.
Right.
I mean, just hardly nothing. So these guys have had to work for everything they've got now. And to watch them play today, and look at Abreu, what he did his first 4 years in the league, coming in. And they know how to play the game.
Well, Hawk, one of the things I've always, as a lifelong White Sox fan, and you know this too, and you mentioned Louis Aparicio, and even before him, Chico Carrascal. And the White Sox have had this wonderful history of welcoming Latin players and other minorities. You know, Larry Doby being a manager. And
right.
I think doesn't that help when they're, talking to other players? So when Jose Abreu's talking maybe to a young player who's looking to come up, saying, look, this is a welcoming environment here in Chicago for Latin ball players, for African-American ball players.
Well, it doesn't hurt, for sure. But it's not as impactful, so to speak, as having the manager tell you that. And I could kick myself into behind a couple of years ago. We're in Minnesota playing the Twins, and I go into the food room, and there was Willie Garcia, Abreu, and Avi Garcia, and Rick Renteria sitting at the table together, the four of them. They were laughing their ass off. I mean, Rick had them. It was a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah.
Because of the Latin players, because they don't speak a lot of English, you don't see them laughing very often. And Rick had these guys in, I'm telling you, stitches.
That's great.
And I was just dumb enough not to take out my phone and take a picture of it.
You know, capture the moment.
It was, because I was starting to laugh, and I don't speak Spanish.
That's a great point, though, because you'll get a young player sometimes who'll get a reputation for being a little sullen or a little difficult, and it's not because of that at all. It's because they don't understand and they feel shy about expressing themselves.
That happens so often. And that's one reason. And you know, if I owned a ball club, I would have every minor league manager, every minor league coach take that Rosetta Stone and learn how to speak.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because you've seen that in the Japanese movement too, and the Japanese players come over and they're having such trouble being able to, unless they were, you know, unless they spoke English, they're having a lot of trouble, not just with the language but the culture. You know, it's so different. Now, can I just talk about the Dominican Republic with you? Because I do not understand what is in the water in the Dominican Republic. What do you think is creating such amazing talent off of that one part of Latin America, that one island?
San Pedro de Macorís. They put out more. It's amazing what they've done down there. Well, you know, first of all, you got to understand, those guys down in the islands, in Venezuela and Cuba, isn't it terrible what's going on in Venezuela? I played 3 years down there, won a ball. I love Venezuela, and what's going on with Maduro down there is unbelievable. In fact, Ozzy and I were just talking. Ozzy's going back down there tomorrow.
He could become president down there.
let me tell you what.
He sticks around long enough.
It amazes me that Ozzy's not managing today. I'm telling you what.
Is he the best? He is the best.
You know, people, they forget. His first year was 2004.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Big Hurt goes down. Max Ordonez go down. When they went down, we were in first place.
Yeah.
And when you lose those two guys, you're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you ain't going to win.
250 RBI right there.
And then you got 05 comes in. And the reason, see, that I call this my Ozzy ring.
Huh. This is 05 championship ring.
Yeah. This is it right here. World Series, 11-1 in the playoffs.
Right.
The only team to beat us was California in the first game of that series. Yeah. In fact, we saw something where you'll never see again, too. We saw four consecutive complete games.
Yes.
And within six pitches of having five consecutive complete games.
Yeah, it's never going to happen again.
Jose Contreras, okay, Contreras started the first game, and he goes eight and a third. Then Neil Kotz comes on, throws six pitches, gets the last two outs. Then John Garland goes in game two. Burley goes in game two. Garland, Garcia, and then Contreras, all complete games. You'll never see that again.
And they were all in command in the ninth inning. It wasn't like, oh, let's just leave him in for the sake. Ozzy didn't care about any kind of record like that. It was because they were still horses in the ninth inning.
I'll tell you what, that was the greatest exhibition in modern times. And as I said, it's something never to be seen again.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
First of all, it takes a general manager. And look at what, you know, Bobby did. Boy, what a job he did coming in relief.
Bobby Jenks. Yeah.
What a job Bobby did. He'll always have a place in my heart because, you know, we had – Senga Chikatsu started off the season. Then we had the kid from San Francisco.
Hermanson. Yeah.
Dustin Hermanson. And Dustin goes down after picking up 34 quick saves.
Yeah.
And Bobby comes in. But you got to have a general manager and a manager with stones enough to bring a rookie up in that kind of a situation in a pennant race. And look at the job he did.
Yeah. A rookie who, had, you know, people had some doubts about him, about this and that. And Ozzy believed in him. The general manager believed in him. That was the story of the whole season,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was.
Finding, you know, niches for players. Somebody like Jeff Bloom. Oh, let's have him pinch hit. He'll just hit a home run in extra innings. I mean, everybody played a role.
Well, we had three closers that year, and you'll probably never see that again.
Yeah.
To win a World Series.
Oh, right. Now you got to carry 12. Back to Ozzy for a second. Ozzy, I think, is one of those guys that is so just looking at him, just watching him smile, watching him laugh, just watching him move. You just have confidence in him, right? And he's one of those guys. I think that we were talking to Dwayne Wise yesterday, and I was saying, you know, when I ever talked to Ozzy, I don't understand a word he's saying. I'm just
I don't either.
Right. Well, I would
not
say
that he's a kid.
The Latin players don't understand a word he's saying either. I don't think. I think it's just a pure whatever it is. Every other word's a swear, so it's okay.
Yeah.
And you just kind of got to understand what he means. And I'm with you completely. I don't understand. I love him in the booth. I like when they use him, you know, as an analyst and as a. But I mean, there's a guy who should be in baseball, helping a team and helping identify talent.
Well, he's got a problem, and that problem being analytics, sabermetrics, because what they're doing right now is Ozzie, if he were managing a club today, and there's some managers who currently manage right now, I'm not going to name them, and good managers, in the last couple of years have told me they've had enough of that BS. They've had enough. They don't want some 25-year-old kid sending down a proposed lineup to face Jimmy Jones or Sammy Smith that night.
Right.
And Ozzie is not a guy who's going to let anybody make out his lineup. Right. He's going to make them out.
It's human. It's not data.
So you got a lot of young general managers out there and assistant general managers out there right now, and they don't have balls enough to hire him, you know, because they know he's not going to go along with their analytics, which they're trying to bring in.
Right.
Those guys, there's a place for numbers in baseball.
Sure.
Because people are enamored with numbers.
Yeah.
They really are. I'm enamored with numbers. I used to love math, and I love it because it broadens your fan base. It gives them a connection
right.
to the game.
For sure.
For guys who love the game and who couldn't play it.
Because it's geometry, too, right?
Yeah, everything. You know, but not to the degree, and it'll just go on its course, but I'll guarantee you, it won't be more than 10 or 12 years from now. They're gone.
Can you just stay here and keep saying that? You can say anything in front of Gone, and it works for me.
It's like, yeah.
I just don't want Hawk to be out on a date and the next table over because they'll look at me and go, Richard, she gone. And I'll be like, well, I don't have a chance.
Well, you could always clear out a room in a hurry.
Thank you, sir.
Hawk Harrelson's with us. We're going to come right back. We're broadcasting live from SoxFest 2019 at the Hilton Chicago. Broadcasting live from SoxFest 2019 at the Hilton Chicago. I want to congratulate our friend John Alfirovich, Apple Chevrolet. He won the Time Magazine Dealer of the Year this afternoon in Los Angeles.
Awesome.
How about that? One of 51 dealers in out of 16,000
wow.
in America to be nominated, and he won it.
It's amazing.
I'd like to take full credit.
I was going to say.
But
you are his best hype man. Nobody talks.
Rokon creative talent.
Yes, that is really true. But here's a man who needs no introduction and has created his own talent. Hawk Harrelson, Chicago White Sox legend and a player, a broadcaster. You live and you breathe baseball. There should just be a statue. It says baseball and it's you.
I don't know about that.
I do. All right, so let's give me a sense as we look forward to 2019 here. I mean, it's very exciting, right?
I'll tell you what, young talent
coming up.
Yes, yeah, we do, and the thing that I'm most pleased with is we got the right man. You know, when you get on that boat, you got to have a captain to get you steering the right way. When you get on that plane, you got to have a pilot to get you steering the right way. But we got the right man to steer this ball club in Rick Renteria. He is a thoroughbred. He is a fantastic manager, and he's a fantastic guy. And what I like about him, he controls that ball club. He's the leader of that ball club. Very seldom you see a manager who's a leader of that ball club. Rick Renteria is the leader of that team. And we saw it last year. You know, a couple of guys pop up to the infield, just trot down to first base, yank.
Yeah.
He gone. Sit him on the bench.
He did it.
You know, put him on the bench. And then it happened again a couple of times. Put him on the bench. That's the only way you can control players today because of the money. And I am so happy they're making the money. You know,
sure.
When I came into major leagues, I was young, and my minimum salary was $6,000. My first 2 years in the major leagues, I made more money playing golf, shooting pool, and arm wrestling than I did playing major league baseball.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Arm wrestling.
Sometimes in the same day. It was an off day.
Hey, you go into a bar, people, Sports Illustrated did a story on me way back then when I about my arm wrestling. And you go into a bar, say, in Baltimore. And the reason I mention it, because it happened in Baltimore one night. I go in there, and a guy comes to me and says, you Hawk Harrelson? I said, yeah. He said, look, I saw where you're an arm wrestler. I said, yeah. He said, I'll arm wrestle you. I said, for how much? He goes, $50. I said, well, make it 100 and we'll do it.
Huh.
So he bet 100 and he went down in about 3 seconds.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what 100 was, you know.
That's $100.
That's a week's salary for a lot of people.
You better believe it. I'm telling you what.
Hundy, nice.
But that was the conditions back in those days, you know. And today the minimum salary, I think, is $180,000. And you got guys, you know, making, you know, 20, 30, 40 million, 100 million, 125, 200 million. And I'm happy for them because it goes to show you, you know, somebody's got to, these guys aren't dumb. He's owners.
Right.
Yeah.
We got about a minute left here. So the question, if you get like a gigantic superstar, whoever it happens to be, it ends up on this roster this year, and then you do have a lot of guys who are making not that
right.
because you got a lot of young players here. Does that create an inspiration for them, or does that create another like a jealousy issue?
Well, it goes both ways, some of them, but most of it is an inspiration because you got to understand those kids down the island, they play a different game coming up than our kids play. They don't have all the swing angles and numbers and everything
right,
else.
The metrics, right? Launch
they
angle.
See ball, hit ball, have fun. The worst thing you can do from a baseball player in the major leagues is take away his childlike qualities. And the Latins have retained their childlike qualities more than our guys do.
That's excellent. Hawk, thank you so much for being with us.
Hawk Harrelson, everybody.
Woo!
All right.
The man, the legend.
One run in. Abreu scores.
Now back to Hilton, Chicago. The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis is live from SoxFest on 720 WGN.
So we're doing a special top 5 at 5
yeah.
that we've been rolling out since 5 o'clock, although we haven't gotten to it in 6:10 already.
No.
So here we go. This is number 5, White Sox, top 5 White Sox moments that
Love
we
it.
Have called that have audio associated with them.
Woo.
Okay.
Some of them predate the recording. So here we go. 1959, White Sox clinching the pennant.
Pitcher Jerry Staley is sent to the mound by Lopez. The Sox first pennant in 40 years hangs in the balance. One pitch ends the suspense. Sharp fielding and the Sox turn it into a double play. The White Sox dance off the field with a 4-2 victory and the pennant in the bag. Their first championship since 1919. It's joyful pandemonium in the dressing room, an exultant conclusion to a season of brilliant play by a team that was low-rated earlier as a no-hit club. The White Sox came a long way for this celebration.
Oh, that's Ed Herlihy from Universal International News.
Somebody calm him down.
Yes.
You got to remember, it was only like 14 years after World War II, so everything, it was not that long after, like, well, we all still living and Hitler's dead, so you couldn't get too excited, I guess, about a pennant, right? How about that? A double play. The fellas have won it all.
The fellas have won it.
It's amazing. I love that. I've never heard that call before.
Right.
That's beautiful.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's great.
The thing is that it's the World Series. I mean, that's clinching the pennant.
That was the World Series. Well, unfortunately, they did not clinch win the World Series against the Dodgers. So that was the highlight.
Yeah, and then but was it? I think when the pennant was clinched, was that when Mayor Daley ordered the sirens
Commissioner
to go off?
Quinn, I believe the fire commissioner was the one who the fire alarms went
Commissioner
off.
Quinn.
And half of the city, of course, did not know the White Sox had clinched the pennant and thought the air raid was, again, that maybe World War III was happening.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the way that Chicago kind of works.
Yeah.
It sort of worked in the day legendarily is that, one guy could say, okay, yeah, go ahead, the air raid siren, go ahead, put it off.
And it's not like you're immediately going to be able to go to what we're going to go. Perry Mason's on your television. They're not going to break in and let you know what happened.
And Mayor Daley had only been mayor for 4 years at that point.
Think about
that for
a second.
Young fella.
Right, exactly.
Battle
Who was there? I mean, remember, they showed him at least against, I don't know if game one was here against the Dodgers, but they showed him like in the, he had the front row seats.
Same seats that his son was at when they won it in 05.
Right.
Like the second or third row there by the dugout.
It's pretty great. It's,
it is.
It's a pretty great
Get
tradition.
A bottle of beer and a fish.
Should we do number 4 while we're at it?
I think so.
Jim Thome is going to join us coming up here in just a few minutes. We are live at SoxFest. I should mention that, SoxFest, which is at the... And we'll talk about this in just a second. I think this is amazing. It is so different. The energy here, first of all, because there's so much excitement about the White Sox, but the energy is so different than it is at these other fan fests.
Yes.
Because there's true passion here. There isn't faked up passion.
Right.
Yeah. Here's your number 4. This is a Bo Jackson home run to clinch the AL West over Seattle.
High time drive into left field. Roger Angman looks up. You can put it in the door. Yeah. A 3-run homer. Bo Jackson and the Sox lead it 3-0.
believe he had just come back.
That's awesome.
That was his first at bat, as I recall. Bo Jackson had been injured.
That was a fun era. Because, you know, Bo Jackson was such an amazing football player, too. And you just and now the guys are choosing one or the other.
Yeah, you have
not playing
to.
Both.
And unfortunately, you know, he had that horrible hip injury. He played baseball pretty much on one leg.
Wow. Because
he would have been. He had Mickey Mantle level raw power and skills and speed, obviously. But still managed to, once in a while, those great heroics. I mean, he made the All-Star team in two leagues. You know, All-Pro and NFL, and made an All-Star team in baseball.
Right.
That's insane.
Right. I mean, that is totally insane. All right. And since we're here, I want to play this because we talked to Dwayne Wise yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. Amazing.
And Dwayne Wise will be forever remembered in baseball for this one play.
That ball hit deep into left center field. Wise back.
Makes the catch.
What a play.
Dwayne Wise makes the catch. What a play by Wise! Mercy! A great catch by Dwayne Wise! Alexei! Yes! 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 History!
That's the burly
perfecto.
Perfect game. Yeah.
When that ball was hit, you hear Hawk, his voice almost sounds deflated. Knew, like dadgummit, like, there goes the perfecto.
In the ninth
and he's kind of like, heads down, and he's like, wait, what?
Absolutely true.
He made that catch, and then, of course, you hear him in his voice. That's one of my favorite calls.
It is. Everybody stopped to pay attention. I want to say the one thing. We mentioned this earlier. We should mention it again. They have one of the coolest things I've ever seen at a fan fest ever, which is a garage sale. You can go through and you can buy things, used pants that were worn in games, or some cleats that were worn in games.
Yeah.
There's
dirt.
There's dirt from Michael Kopech's mound for his first game in the major leagues from last September. This is
game used bats. Tons of game used bats.
Right.
By. You know, guys on the current team, and even going back a few years.
Old helmets with the tars still on them.
Catchers,
some of them are all beat up. Look, one of them looks like it took a baseball to the head. Got a big dent in it. There's some catcher's mask, catcher pads.
Every imaginable White Sox hat. Like, you know, they had like Loyola Day, so there was the one in the Loyola
so cool.
colors.
Yeah.
But it's a White Sox hat, which is really cool.
So the amazing thing to me is that this really is about the fans. Because we fancy pants broadcasters.
Yeah.
Who are wearing our fancy pants broadcaster credentials?
Yeah,
tried to walk in there, and they said, "No,
not for use,
not for use. Right, get out.
What do you think you're going, buddy?
Right, you got to have a fan one day pass.
How about that?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
that's great.
I love
it's all
that.
About the fans here. At
I go. Why is that, sir? He goes, I don't make the rules, buddy.
Which is also a very White Sox.
Yeah, I was like, all right, this, I'm not messing with this
there
guy.
There you go. Yeah.
But a great idea, the garage sale.
I love the garage. It benefits White Sox charities.
Ah,
all goes to charity.
Can't go wrong.
But that same guy threw me out of the Journey concert at Comiskey Park in 78. But I haven't even seen Tin Lizzy yet. Those were the days.
And I know it would not surprise you to know that I was at the Jacksons concert at Comiskey. Because, you know, that's the sort of, you know, in my disco pants.
Oh, my God. Yes, they were the Jacksons, a little bit older, right?
Right, yeah.
How about Hawk Harrelson wearing the full white Adidas jumpsuit today? Isn't he looking good
today?
Yeah,
wait till folks see the
photo. He pulls it off.
Wow.
And the gold, I mean, he just,
and the white loafers.
The whole thing. The tinted glasses. I mean,
it was a look. He should have actually been driven here in a golf cart. He looks so great. You know, I know Hawk's got one of those for like every day of the week. Teal, white, purple, black, maroon.
The January jumpsuit.
I'm so jealous because I want to wear that the rest of this weekend.
That thing is awesome.
I totally want to wear that.
Yes, best of luck to all of us now.
But instead, I'm going to be wearing my Abreu game-worn pants.
Right.
From the garage sale.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
All right. Our very own Kevin Powell, K-Pow, as he's known now around the world.
K-Pow.
Is
I think he's earned that title.
We are at Sox Fest, by the way. Sox Fest 2019 at the Chicago Hilton. And it is it is a very, 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 very fun event. And Kevin Powell and Richard Roper sit next to each other. And there's Sox energy between the two of them.
Totally.
I've never really seen
They are giddy about some of this stuff.
It's sort of like, you know, it's almost a father-son moment that I'm
yeah,
having
a couple
over
of generations two, here. We took our picture in front of the cool WGN White Sox step and repeat. You could do a one of the, that you call it a GIF, I call it a GIF. Yes. You could do photos, you could do videos.
Richard, you're showing him the difference between the splitter and the...
Yes. And he taught me how to throw a curveball today.
Oh, that's such a sweet moment.
Big moment. We played catch.
So, remember this day.
I was telling him about teams like the Houston Colt 45s and the Montreal Expos. Those weren't real teams. You're making those up.
I grew up on the north side, but I feel a certain connection with Sox fans.
Definitely.
Just something about Sox fans.
He's been a Sox fan his whole life, which is an amazing thing. And so, and of course, Richard Rober, a Southside guy, always been that way. So it's really fun to watch these two geek out. And I will say this, that the Geek Fest was at its very greatest apex a few hours ago when Kevin Powell sat down with Rick Hahn. And here we are on the eve of, it was right before Sox Fest opened. There were a lot of rumors about what was going to be announced here during Sox Fest.
Absolutely.
We're still a little unclear about whether that, you know, over the next couple days, any major announcement's going to happen. But here is, I just want you to listen to the excitement in Kevin Powell's voice as he talks to the general manager of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn.
Rick Hahn, your White Sox general manager, joins us now from Sox Fest Salon B here at the Hilton Chicago in downtown Chicago. Rick, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Right across from us, there's the Chicago White Sox Charities Garage Sale. And I'm not kidding. You can buy, they have it labeled game used Michael Kopech debut dirt from Sox Park. Will you be purchasing any of that, Rick, for $25? It seems like a steal to me.
You know what? It sounds like a steal. It goes to a good cause, and I'm kicking myself right now because if my boys at home hear that that exists, then I am confident I will be spending the $50 to get them each some infield dirt, which I could have easily scooped up
next
day.
Yeah,
that did not cross my mind.
Full access there. I don't see any Manny Machado jerseys yet, though, Rick.
Well, there might be an old Antonio Osuna number 13 jersey that you could turn into one, perhaps.
It's the giant elephant in the room. I know there's nothing you can really tell us about it, but how would you characterize it from your vantage this offseason for you as a general manager? The pursuit of whether Machado or Harper and the whole thing it has become in the baseball world.
You know, you're right. I can't comment specifically on any free agents or I certainly don't want to get into negotiating publicly through the media. I will say, though, from a personal standpoint, like I feel the same roller coaster that people feel following this all on Twitter and the age we would live in where rumors leak out and you think things are close and then they're not close and are they in it, are they not in it, who else is in it, which is just really a byproduct of the age we live in. I think for me and probably by extension a lot of Sox fans, the biggest challenge has been to not lose the forest for the trees, so to speak, in that when we started this rebuild process a little over 2 years ago, one of our goals, one of the main goal, was to acquire as much premium talent as we possibly could, to have just depth upon depth of championship caliber players. We set out to do that via trade, obviously, early on, additionally internationally with guys like Luis Robert and the other signees that Marco Patti and his staff has made, and the guys through the draft like Nick Madrigal that Nick Hostetler has made. And free agency was a part of that. And if in the end we wind up not converting on one of these premium free agents, I will personally be disappointed. I'm competitive. I want these guys and makes us better. However, whether we do or we don't doesn't really change the trajectory dramatically that we're on right now. Adding one might accelerate things a little bit, might make the odds slightly greater, which is a good thing, which is why we're in it. But we've already accumulated a great number of players so that the future is still very bright, even if we don't convert. And then that's the point that I think I probably lose sight of from time to time. The trajectory we're on is a very good one. We may well be a year early, so to speak, in terms of this pursuit. And if for whatever reason we don't convert, we're going to be right back at it when the time is a little more ripe.
There's obviously a certain buzz, though, with White Sox fans, even just being in the conversation. Whether the reports are accurate or not, it obviously appears the White Sox are heavily interested in Machado. As you were walking up to our broadcast here, one of our engineers, Ernie, walked up to you and said, "I love you." And I think he's echoing a lot of White Sox fans, Rick, and I know you're not going to pat yourself on the back or gloat, but it does feel... it feels different right now with the White Sox organization than really it ever has, at least in my lifetime.
knowing that this is not something that's going to be a flash two-year thing. This looks like this could be a monster for years to come and sustainable. You got to feel the buzz from Sox Nation here at Sox Fest.
The support has been outstanding. Obviously, Sox Fest this weekend sold out, but even going back for the last several years, people have bought into this. There was this narrative or this myth, so to speak, that like the White Sox would never rebuild because the fans would never stand for it. Now, obviously, we blew that.
And now look at the support.
And now the support's been outstanding. Yeah. We didn't know exactly what it was going to be like going in, but Jerry and Kenny and myself all felt this was obviously the right thing to do. And even if the support wasn't there initially, they'd hopefully come around, or at least would once we started to win. But the support has just been wonderful. And I think there is. You go back to early in the offseason when these players became free agents, and we were kind of an afterthought. Like people, I think even in Vegas, you could wager on the six or seven most likely teams to land one of these guys, and we weren't even listed.
But everybody kept shrugging off, the White Sox are going to get that guy. White Sox,
exactly.
Go, you know what? I think you might be able to surprise this offseason.
And the thing is that isn't the right mentality. We deserve a seat at the table.
Yeah.
We belong there. Not just because we're in Chicago and we're a proud organization, but because of what the future holds. Yeah. And these players and the agents certainly understand that. And granted, we might be a year early. We're a little over 2 years into a rebuild. That's not usually the time you start getting uber aggressive in free agency. But we can't control when these guys become available, and we wanted to be opportunistic with the opportunity to convert when they did arise.
We're in Salon B. Michael Kopech's going to be signing autographs here. We're expecting a massive crowd for that. He appears to be a guy that is embracing where he's at, potentially could be a face of the organization type player. Can you give us any update on how Michael's doing with the rehab, Tommy John, and all that?
Everything's going very well for him so far. Now, look, it's extremely early. First hurdle to clear, which in this day and age is not a real high one, is that everything medically goes smoothly, and everything with the repair was great. He came out of it healed, and it was a clean and good ligament transplant, so to speak, and they're pleased with it. The second hurdle is a much longer one, and that is the arduous rehab. And arduous not necessarily from a physical standpoint, but almost from a mental standpoint. You get bored. And you don't get to see a lot of progress. It's not like, okay, it's 6 months post-op, I'm going to go air this out, and there's my 100, and I feel great.
Right.
No, you got to do a very regimented throw game program that is boring. And Michael is in a great spot psychologically. Over the course of this rehab process, he might get a little frustrated from time to time, but we have the support around him to help get him through that.
He's Rick Kahn, your White Sox general manager. I know you got a busy night ahead, busy couple days ahead. I'll let you go shop around at the White Sox Charities Garage Sale here in Salon B. Thanks for stopping by the broadcast. Really appreciate it, Rick.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Struck about swinging. Sox win. Sox win.
Live from Hilton, Chicago and Sox Fest 2019. Here's Rowan and on the flagship home of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
Hey now. It's the Rowan Kahn Show with Evan Watches live from the...
Sox Fest.
Yes, we're having a little bit of a technical issue. Let's go back to what we were doing just before, because this is even worse. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying this about our we're having a microphone issue, and it's crazy.
Just a little bit of feedback.
Just a little bit. Hey, we're broadcasting, as I said, live from Sox Fest 2019, the Hilton Chicago, and stepping up to us right now. Now, let me just say this, young man. Dylan Cease is with us. Dylan is...
Dylan Cease here,
right,
ladies and gentlemen.
Hawk Harrelson, now he might have had a cocktail, but Hawk Harrelson was sitting here just a few minutes ago, and we were talking about all the young kids in coming up through the system to the White Sox, and we said, well, who's your favorite? He said Dylan Cease. How about that?
Wow, that's special.
That is special. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's just talk about what. First of all, this is your first.
Second Sox Fest.
Second Sox Fest, total.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Exciting. Yeah, it's really exciting.
And I think when you see,
I would like to. I'd like to actually send him over there
to the garage sale.
You could get into the garage sale.
Over to the garage sale there.
They wouldn't let us in the garage sale because we're working broadcasters and they only want fans in there. Do you think they would let Dylan Cease into the garage sale?
I think they'd probably someone would say, "Hey, where'd you get that really cool Dylan Cease jersey? I want to get one too that he's wearing right
I'd
now."
I'd love to see it.
It looks good. Looks good in it, kid. You're looking good in there. You know they got dirt. From Kopech's first start over there, they're selling for $25.
Isn't that great?
So I think you should give to him for like your grab bag. You
know? I'm sure he's already got it.
Speaking of Michael Kopech, these are Rick Hahn's words, not mine. I interviewed Rick Hahn last spring, and I said, "Tell me about Dylan Cease." He says, "Dylan Cease has as much upside as anybody in our farm system, and I include Michael Kopech in that." We asked, we talked to Hawk, we talked to Jason Benetti. Everybody keeps mentioning your name. That's sort of, I know, not for diehard White Sox fans, but maybe in the baseball world, gets lost in the shuffle when you are in a farm system that is Eloy Jimenez, that is Michael Kopech. And if you're not familiar with Dylan Cease, he was brought over in the trade between the White Sox and Cubs. He was named MLB Pipeline Pitcher of the Year last year after a dominant season. What's it been like being a part of this rebuild? Because it's like an endless stream of talent in the White Sox farm system, the Kopechs, the Cease, Eloy. What's it been like for you being around these guys? It's got to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that I was with the Cubs when they were, you know, Brian Baez and all them were in the minor leagues. So to actually be a part of this one is, you know, something special for sure.
How often do you communicate with these other guys, whether it's Kopech, whether it's Eloy or Luis Robert was over here signing autographs? Do you guys stay in touch? The clubhouse at spring training last year, when all the prospects were together, was you could just feel something special was brewing. There's a lot of excitement there.
Yeah, well, the guys who speak the same language as me, it's a little bit easier.
right.
Yeah, we stay in touch a pretty good amount, whether it's Snapchat or texting. So,
you've been through Tommy John surgery before, and Michael Kopech obviously dealing with that right now. What sort of encouragement or words have you given Kopech about dealing with that and bouncing back from surgery?
Yeah, I'm personally not worried about it at all because I know how hard he works. So, for me, it's just follow what the trainer's saying, you're going to be good. I mean, he'll be back probably, you know, earlier than he's supposed to be, and you know, it'll be good.
When you're going about your preparations, we're talking about all this excitement, Dylan, but you just have to worry about yourself, right?
Yes.
I mean, you remind yourself day in and day out, I just got to take it one step at a time, not to get too far ahead of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to remind myself. It's what I'm trying to do. You know, it's everyone wants you to. You know, it is exciting, but everyone wants you to really buy into the hype, and, you know, you can get lost in that. So I'm just trying to execute pitches the best that I can.
You have a target date when you want to be making your debut, just like Kopech did last year?
I have it circled in my calendar, actually.
What's the day?
No, I mean, you know, obviously as soon as possible. But like I said, if you start thinking about that, you're going to start not executing pitches, and then all of a sudden, you know, it won't be good. So
find yourself overstrike, trying to do too much.
Exactly.
You know, strike out the whole side with one pitch.
Simple.
You can't do
that. I keep it simple. Yeah. I execute pitches, and whatever happens, happens.
Right. Okay, so if the mound dirt is $25 right now, what do you think your mound dirt is worth?
My mound dirt?
Mm-hmm. $25 for a little vial of it.
Mine's $8, maybe.
Oh, come on.
It's like fantasy. It's like fantasy baseball,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know? Be sure to scoop it up, though, because obviously there's some money you can be made there, right?
Maybe the dirt when I faced Ichiro, maybe.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. I'd buy that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That would be something.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, as a lifelong Southsider, I think if you bought all the dirt, it would actually go about 30 feet high. So I'm not sure all of it's actually from the pitching mound. It could be from around
then,
there.
Then you can control the supply and demand.
Exactly.
And you can make up stuff. You can make up whatever you want.
Quarter the market on the dirt.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm watching people actually kind of thumb through the dirt over there, which is kind of weird. Like, they're looking for, like did Kopech didn't lose a tooth in there, did he, at any point?
They may think it's some other sort of grass, you know, if it's what I'm talking about here. I don't know.
Well, it is the whole thing is exciting, right? I mean, like you're saying, you don't want to necessarily get sucked into the hype. Obviously, you know, here at a fan fest, I mean, everybody's talking about what it's going to be like. But there is this is a great moment, I think, for baseball, that baseball is so relevant, and that teams, like, you know, as your experience going through the Cubs organization now with the White Sox, you know, you get this idea that, and especially in Chicago, this is a religion. It isn't just a pastime.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's cool that there is so much hope and there's so much excitement with all of us. You know, it's just adds a little bit extra motivation to know that, you know, these people are this serious about it. And So, you know, I'm very grateful for it.
It's 4 degrees and snowing sideways, and you can't stop White Sox fans from coming out, Dylan. That's pretty cool to see, right?
Yeah. Go White Sox fans,
you know, they're coming from not just the South Side, but a lot of suburbs and even the states around here. There's a lot of hardcore White Sox fans.
Yeah,
so.
It's definitely a cool thing. Puts things into perspective.
Dylan, for fans who haven't seen you pitch a bunch in the minors, is there a player in the pros now that maybe you try to model yourself after? When I watch you pitch, I think of Jake Arrieta. I don't know why. I just do the mechanics a little bit seems similar. The way the chest tore, I don't know. It just I think Jake Arrieta when I watch you pitch. But is there somebody that you see and you say, I want to be like that, or at least you can draw some comparisons to his game?
I would say any right-handed starting pitcher that's a power guy.
Yeah.
I've probably watched his YouTube. You know, I mean, those are guys that are fun to watch, the power guys. So I'm trying to just be nasty and throw hard.
Favorite player growing up?
Growing up? Player or pitcher?
Let's go pitcher.
We'll go player. Oh, we'll go player first.
Okay.
I was a huge Alex Rodriguez fan.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So it was like Chipper Jones, Alex Rodriguez.
Ah, Chipper.
And then, whatever happened to him? Whatever happened to Alex Rodriguez? You never see him in the press or anything?
I know. Yeah. I think I don't know if he still lives in the United States. I'm not sure.
I think people forget sometimes the talent that Chipper Jones had.
That guy was unbelievable.
Up, right? Yeah. 21 years old.
Yeah.
And was, you know, a great
switch
player.
Switch hitting.
So. Yeah, could do everything.
Yeah. He was fun to watch.
I love the fact that you like to be a power pitcher because, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong. A lot of guys got, you know, 97 different speeds, and they like to nibble, and you still got that almost like the old school 60s and 70s pitcher mentality. Here's what I got. Let's see if you can hit it.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, my best versus your best. Let's see who wins.
I love that. I love that.
The good thing is the odds are always stacked in my favor, so it's, I'm like a casino with better odds.
I like that.
I like, great.
That really, I guess that kind of, you know, when you look at it, I just cannot imagine, and I was asking this, all right, so from a mound perspective, I was thinking, you know, like when you see a guy like Eloy Jimenez or somebody who's, you know, who's coming up, and these guys are gigantic, and you're stopping and you're thinking, all right, where is the zone here? Where do I have to put this ball so that,
see, I'm not worried about that.
You don't ever think about that. You're just going to go hard.
Yeah, I mean, wherever the glove's at, I'm going to try to hit it. If I don't, I'm going to throw it as hard as I can or make it move as much as I can, and something's going to happen.
Dylan, what do you make of the way games are managed now or approached? I love talking to baseball people about this because there's a lot of debate about bullpenning or managers pulling starting pitchers earlier than they used to.
Especially in the playoffs.
Especially in the playoffs. Right. They play matchups. So from your standpoint as a starting pitcher, I'm sure you don't like that as much because I know nobody ever wants to get taken out of a game. But what's your viewpoint on how baseball is being managed and approached game by game, really?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see how that would be frustrating. Hopefully by that point, you've got enough. You've established yourself enough to where you can say, "Hey, I want to stay in." But for me, I'm just going to do whatever they tell me to do. You know, at the end of the day, I'm trying to be a good teammate and the best player I can be. So,
yeah, you want to get to that point where if someone tries to come out in the fourth inning, all 35,000 fans are booing their manager.
Max Scherzer, like they're not taking that guy out.
No,
in the fourth
not.
Inning. If the guy's on second base, you know, he gets to keep going. So, you kind of got to earn that, I think. Now,
yep, absolutely.
Don't ever let him take you out, Dylan. Fight till the end. Fight till the end.
I do love when guys get so mad when the manager's approaching them. You know, what are you? Oh, come on.
Me too.
Smash I love seeing that, man. I love
passion.
That
competitiveness.
What's the worst thing you ever said to a manager when they came out to grab the ball? Did you ever make an appeal? Did you ever do the full appeal?
No. I've never said anything. Very, very polite.
Yeah,
just hand the ball over, go to the dugout.
Yes, I want to see you get angry. I want to see it too.
I don't get angry.
No, that's
good.
It's
very hard to make me angry.
That's good. You can do that later. You know, privately think things. But, but that. I mean, that is the. I think that's the key to, you know, longevity as a pitcher too. You can't get too
lose
high
cool.
or
you have to
too
stay
low.
Consistent.
Right? And think about that next.
And
start.
The way I look at it too is, if I did poorly, it's on me. So what am I getting angry about? You know, it play better, fix it. You know.
Unless it's totally unfair when they're pulling. Unless it's completely
unless it's
unfair.
The umpire. You get angry at an umpire.
But. I can only imagine you, Ro, getting pulled.
Oh, my God, yeah. What, are you kidding me? I would actually do this. I would just hold on the ball. I'd run around the mound. I wouldn't get the ball
leaving.
Back up. It's like a whole thing I would do.
They have other balls, you know, just for guys like you, just in case you ever do that.
All right, so now, I mean, you're going to be a big star in this town, Dylan Cease. You're going to be a big star. And let's see, where are you hanging out? Day game on a weekend. You're out on a Saturday night. Where's Dylan Cease going?
I honestly don't know the city at all. I know nothing of the area. So wherever wherever the other guys are hanging out, I'm hoping they invited me.
Okay. I think we're going to...
I'd always tell them you left your wallet at home, too, when it's going to come time for the bills. So guys, I don't know the city. I just figured I'd leave everything back in the hotel room.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll show you some things here this year. We'll see. We'll give the full rope.
I'll ask Twitter. At that point, I'll ask social media.
All right. Dylan Cease, thanks very much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having
me.
Have fun
this season. Thanks for having me.
Can't wait to see you on the mound. Broadcasting live from SoxFest 2019 at the Hilton Chicago.
Yes.
And I would like to say that it has been just a ton of fun. This
totally
really is a different Chicago experience.
Absolutely.
Than the other fan festivals here.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I mean, you know, they talk about Sox fans being, you know, like, Sox fans like to tell you how they are true fans. And all the other teams' fans are not true fans. And having been here now, I believe it.
Now you believe it. Yeah. You get a sense that no one is here just to post a picture on Instagram, right? Like that.
That is a great point, Anna.
These guys look like, what the hell is Instagram?
I'm not going to deal with that. I got too much to deal with
That's a great point.
Too much to check out.
I think if I am not mistaken, this is the first time I actually saw, I haven't seen a phone come out. There's nobody on their phone here.
How true.
There was a guy had an Instamatic taking pictures of his kids. I mean, it was like...
But very much in the moment, it's great to see generations, so many young kids here. They were just as thrilled to see Hawk Harrelson, but then to see Dylan Cease, to see some of the other young players and getting their autographs and posing pictures. And the young players are just so great with the fans.
And
really, you can tell they're really excited to be here. It's cool.
Oh, yeah.
You can see these little kids, their faces light up. It's so sweet to get to interact with the players like this. And it's amazing.
So we're doing the top five White Sox moments that we could find. And we've worked our way down to number two, 1983. Oh, okay. Who could forget this? Harold Baines to clinch the AL West.
You see Harold second and game-winning RBIs. You couldn't ask for a better man to stand at the plate than that. And Del Crandall is going to bring the infield in. The outfield is shallow. Vandenberg will work from the stretch. And that is into shallow center. It's just for the run. Cruz tags. Here's the catch. Here comes the throw. Here comes Cruz. That's from the Golden Ray. The Chicago White Sox, the 1983 Western champions in the American League.
Wow.
Wow.
That was fun.
Nice stuff.
That was
fun. That. Yeah, yes, big leap there.
Where my Sox had a college that year as they were playing the Orioles.
Right. Yeah.
In the ALCS, and that didn't work out well for me because all my friends were from the East Coast. And then, finally, I love this one.
Mm-hmm.
I love this one. I think this is probably, in terms of moments in Sox lore, it doesn't get much better than this. World Series, Game 2, Paul Konerko at bat.
Bases loaded, two out. With Konerko on. And he rips one in the left. Konerko, grand slam. Bedlam in Chicago.
I was in my family room at my parents' house. My dad looked to his right. I looked to my left. We locked eyes. He says, Kevin, if he hits one out here, I'm going to go nuts. And boom! First pitch. Konerko goes deep to left. I have chills right now.
Beautiful.
He circles the bases, throws the right fist in the air. The dramatic background with all the White Sox fans going nuts because it was freezing cold
that
game.
We were out there in the freezing rain.
And it's raining.
Yeah.
And they got the tarps over their head. Nobody cares.
It was huge.
Oh, my God. You don't know what that does to me.
It was, you know, and that game went on to be an all-time classic, but they're feeling there's, you know, they lose that game. All of a sudden, the series is tied at one.
Right.
And they go to Houston. It could have been a whole different
series. You know, at the garage sale across from us, they have my all-time favorite movie, Richard. I think you gave it four stars. It's the 2005 White Sox World Series commemorative DVD,
That's
and I watch
one.
It all the
Director's
time.
Director's cut.
And I still pop a bottle of champagne when they win.
I'll let you in there tomorrow to get a crack at that.
All right, so Kev, you and Hoger going to
special edition of White Sox Weekly,
All
7
right.
to 8. Yes, Michael Kopech, you may have heard of him. He's going to swing by the show. Don Cooper will be here as well.
I want you to tell Kopech that Dylan Cease said that his dirt was worth three times the amount of Kopech's dirt.
Just
see what we can do here.
Start a war
between the two
power righties, starting a war between them.
So Ricky Renteria pulls me aside and goes, what are you doing?
What are you doing? You're killing my clubhouse. So, yeah, fun. It should be a fun White Sox Weekly special, 7 to 8 here.
That's going to be a very fun weekend here at the Hilton Chicago. It's come on, if you're a White Sox fan and you've got tickets to this, I know it's sold out, you just
you are going to love what you're seeing here. It's a ton of fun.
Awesome. Very cool. Fan experience.
Ton of fun.